Hey, quiet! It's him again, the Mona!
Darling, you can't rape a townie.
Let me lick your pretty piggy cunt.
What's the boogeyman?
That's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir doing their annual obscene phone call.
You fucking creep!
The caller is in the house.
The calls are coming from the house.
Hi, this is Tony O'Dell from Chopping Mall, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
Indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode number 26, I believe. So although we're on going out on Christmas Day, which is December the 25th, we're on episode 26. So we kind of misjudged that a little bit. But welcome to our Yuletide Wonderland. In the background, a little bit of Alvin and the Chipmunks, I believe. And of course, as ever, joined by Satan's little helpers, we have Eric from across the pond. How are you doing, Eric?
Oh, I'm feeling a bit rough, but full of Christmas cheer at the same time.
Why is that, Eric?
Because we had office Christmas drinkies last night.
And what did you drink?
I drank what possibly was a full bottle of white wine and then four rum and cokes in the pub afterwards. So, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and I was out in another, because I'm sort of halfway between two departments at the moment. I had more Christmas drinkies on Wednesday night as well. So.
Wow. Okay.
So
have you got a rum and coke to hand?
I do, actually. I have a nice stiff one here beside me.
Oh, so have I. How about you, Joseph? Have you got a stiff one to hand?
Oh, it's very stiff, Justin. Thank you for asking.
Oh, okay. Sounding very sultry there. How are you doing, Joseph?
Mm-hmm. I'm good. How are you, man?
I'm very good, thank you. Very good. And Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Good. Okay, a man of few words, but hopefully a few more a little bit later when we get into our feature presentation. And because it's Christmas, what else could we do? Well, that's actually lots of films we could do, but we decided to do the granddaddy of the slasher movie, some would say, and that is Black Christmas from 1974, Bob Clark's classic. And so we're going to get onto that a little bit later. But also, we've got lots of surprises in store. Well, or one or two, perhaps. Lots of Christmas cheer and all sorts of good stuff coming your way. And we're going to be doing a top three in a little while. First of all, have you guys seen anything of interest to our audience the last couple of weeks? Joseph?
Yeah, last night I watched Eyes of a Stranger for the first time, actually. I'd never seen it before.
Okay.
And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good thriller. I liked I liked how the blind girl, Jennifer Jason Leigh, you know, it's all psychosomatic because she was traumatized, you know, as a child. And then through the whole movie, you have this guy going around killing people, you know, stalking women and killing them and, you know, making these obscene phone calls. And eventually he runs afoul of this reporter who, you know, catches on to him. So she starts turning the tables on him. And then he, you know, he finds out who she is. So he starts, you know, he goes after her sister, you know, the blind one. And basically, you know, since she's been traumatized and her blindness and deafness is psychosomatic, once she's traumatized by him again, the psychosomatic thing kind of reverses and so she's able to kind of fight him off at the very end, and it kind of basically comes full circle. And I mean, it has great music. It's really suspenseful, and it's just a well-made film, I believe.
You didn't find it cheesy at all?
No, I didn't find it cheesy at all. Did you?
Well, a little bit, yeah, because the main woman was a bit bug-eyed and a bit sort of like kind of Nancy Drew and like crossed with Princess Diana, I thought.
I rather liked her a lot, actually.
Okay. Oh, well, interesting. How about you guys? Nathan, I presume you've seen it.
Yes, I'd seen it years ago, but I watched it again last night, and I still love it just as much as I always did. I love the artwork for it, too, with the woman in the phone booth.
Hmm.
And, like, I think it's like flowers or something all around her.
Yeah.
And, you know, that tagline where it says, "Sorry, your party is dead."
Yeah. And what does that mean? Is that a kind of, an old kind of telephone thing?
Yeah, well, party, like your party's being reached.
Right. That's what the operator used to say stuff like that. Please hold on while your party is reached.
Right, okay. And how about you, Eric? Have you had the pleasure?
I've had the pleasure, yes, but I can't really recall because it's been so long since I've seen it. But I mean, if it's got somebody who looks like Princess Diana, what's not to like, you know?
Well, not quite Princess Diana, but she's got that kind of early 80s sort of blonde big flick.
Yeah, that's all I want. Okay. All I want is the hair. I don't want the personality.
It's not Princess Diana post-tunnel or anything.
No, well, she's Lauren Toos was on the Love Boat, wasn't she, I believe. Anything else, Joseph?
Yes, I also watched Shallow Grave for the first time, which I thought was pretty good. I mean, it had, you know, this guy, he's a cop, and he kills a girl out in the woods. I think it's kind of accidental, and he gets witnessed by a bunch of girls, or by one girl in particular who's in a group of four out in the woods, but he basically finds out that someone's witnessing, someone saw him kill the girl, and he ends up getting off on like stalking these other the other girls, you know, trying to shut them up so they don't say anything. But it's a pretty good movie. I was with it until the end, and it just stops. And it needed an extra like 10 or 15 minutes to kind of wrap things up, and it didn't. And that really kind of didn't sit well with me. But, you know, other than the ending, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's quite an obscure one, isn't it? Not to be confused with the Danny Boyle British Shallow Grave, which, if you've ever seen that, with the flatmates accidentally or trying to dispose of a body.
Yes, it's quite good, actually. Yeah,
it's a very good film. Very good film. Yeah, it's worth
it. Ewan McGregor is in a very early role with his early 90s indie band haircut.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Indeed. So, okay, well, thank you, Joseph. How about you, Eric? Have you been watching anything of interest?
Well, I've been out boozing most nights. Oh, yes. But I did see Dario Argento's more recent film, Do You Like Hitchcock, which I hadn't seen before.
I've not seen that. Are you good?
It's on along the same lines as The Card Player. Did you like The Card Player?
It's pretty bland, wasn't it, The Card
Player? Yeah, well, Do You Like Hitchcock is pretty bland as well. It has no style. It looks like it's really flat, made-for-TV look. Actually, it was made for TV, I think.
It was,
if I'm not mistaken, yeah. It's very inconsequential. But I am still looking forward to seeing Giallo, which I still haven't watched. But I hear it's a major cheese fest.
It's terrible.
Yeah, I haven't.
You've seen it, yeah?
No, I haven't summed up the courage to watch it yet.
And Joseph has seen it.
Yes, it's awful.
Oh.
Have you seen
an episode of CSI, only worse, I think.
It's not even funny, no?
Nah, I kind of blocked it from my memory. But I got to ask you something. Why do you keep asking me if I like Hitchcock?
Well, have any of you seen the
trailer? I turned this into a Laurel and Hardy routine.
Yeah,
I know.
It's have any of you seen the Dracula 3D trailer that started to surface on the internet?
No. How does it look?
It doesn't look good. Doesn't look good.
Okay.
Yeah, David Felter posted about it on Facebook, but I didn't watch it. I don't know. I've kind of lost interest in Argento.
It's kind of. I mean, it looks okay. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, it looks all right, but it's basically they've done it, but it's to sell on at Cannes or one of the film festivals, so it hasn't got all the special effects finished yet. But the thing I really noticed was there wasn't any kind of camera work almost in it. It was all kind of static shots of things happening. There was no like sweeping cameras or any fetishistic kind of shots of little things and, you know, bugs or gems or anything like that. So, you know, I thought the one thing Argento would be able to do with a film like that would actually do a grand gothic opera with real kind of sweeping cameras and things like that. Maybe it will
Say the exact same about Mother of Tears?
Well, and Phantom of the Opera.
What happened there?
Well, exactly. We did have very low budget, but you know, Phantom of the Opera, I think, was a bit higher budget. But yeah, a lot of his later films are very low budget, and I think this one probably is as well. But it's got Dario Argento in it, so it might be worth a look. I don't know. Anything else, Eric?
Well, I've been watching some Christmassy themed movies, but I'm sure we'll probably be discussing them later. So
right, I'm sure we will do. Yeah. Okay, how about you, Nathan? Thanks, Eric.
I watched Troll 2, which I adore. I mean, I've seen it probably 30 times, but it never gets old. I mean, it's just, it's hilarious from the opening scene till the ending. I mean, everything about that movie is bad, but bad in such a really, really good way.
Absolutely.
I always love the sister's dancing sequence and her big Garfield t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yes. And her using her hands as glasses or whatever you call that. You know where she?
Yeah. Biggles. I know what you're talking about. And what about when
she said
boyfriend? And she's like, "If my father catches you here, he'll cut off your little nuts and eat them."
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. What did they say about his nuts?
Classic line. A classic line.
I read in the documentary, Best Worst Movie, I saw in that documentary where they interviewed the girl that played the sister, and she said that they went to the director, her and the guy that played her boyfriend in the movie, and said, you know, this is not how, you know, American teenagers talk. And he said, no, I know how American teenagers talk. So that's what we ended up with.
And aren't we thankful for it? It was
yes,
we are.
Yeah. Because isn't she like probably the most successful in acting terms of the cast of Troll 2?
Who is she?
I think hard. So. Yeah. I think she still is acting, whereas the rest of them were just sort of, you know, that was their one film.
Right.
My favorite part of Troll 2 is when the kid pees on the food and then the dad gets mad and he reaches under his belt and he goes, "You see this? I'm tightening up my belt to fend off the hunger pangs."
And you can't piss on hospitality, I remember him saying.
Yeah,
so.
You don't piss on hospitality. Yeah, yeah.
So, have you I'd say you're probably tempted as a vegan to go and wee on people's turkeys at Christmas time, are you?
Not really, no.
But
I haven't got that fetish, I must admit. But I'm sure turkeys. Well, no, I haven't done it yet.
As a vegan, you eat a lot of green paste.
Green paste. The goblins were vegetarian, weren't they? And that's how they turned people into vegetables to eat them.
Yeah, that's the ultimate vegetarian horror movie. That's why you should love it, Justin. Yeah.
Apart from Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the ultimate vegetarian horror movie, as Toby Hooper once said.
It's caused to become one.
Yeah.
Sorry? Well, no, it's because he sort of said it's kind of the fear of being chased by, you know, an abattoir worker and killed and eaten. And so it's kind of, I think that was in the back of his mind, or that was what I've read, partly why he came up with the film. It was from the idea of kind of, you know, taking what happens to animals in a slaughterhouse and extrapolating it to people and thinking about the fear that animals have and then the fear that people would have if they're in a similar position. So anyway, that's a downer, isn't it? So on a slightly more upbeat note, have you seen anything else, or you've just been drinking merrily?
Well, I haven't been drinking anything, actually. Oh, okay. But I have the Gorgor Girls on in the background, which I love this movie too. And what's funny about this movie is there's a post on the board about worst final girls and guys, and this movie has the most obnoxious, maybe not quite Detour obnoxious, but a really obnoxious guy as the hero of the film. And I mean, I just don't know how anybody could like this guy. I mean, in one scene, the girl that he's kind of investigating the murders with faints on the floor after seeing like a body all ripped up, and he opens up a 7-Up and just pours it on her face to wake her up.
Really?
I mean, that's how he's
that would
like
work.
Sexist and misogynistic. He's just the worst guy.
Not to mention nasty. 7-Up is terrible.
Yeah,
absolutely. I like 7-Up.
He should have went with Mountain Dew.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's a sugary water, isn't it?
Yeah.
But actually, I like Mellow Yellow.
House. You know, they're in the dead girl's house, and that's all she had, apparently.
Oh. Well, he should have bought Mellow Yellow.
Gosh.
I also think it's funny the scene where he kills a woman and, you know, cuts off her, her nipples, and white milk and chocolate milk comes out.
Ew.
As you can tell, it's a serious film.
Yeah, what was he smoking when he came up with that? I do not know.
I love Herschel Gordon Lewis, though.
Yeah, yeah. And he's still making them, isn't he? He's churning them out. He had about 25-year break, but he's still making films, isn't he? Did you see any of
his? His last one before the big break was the Gorgor Girls.
I mean, it's a long break, wasn't it? Was it like 30 years? So,
I don't know how long it was between
1972 to 2002. So, yeah, 30 years.
30 years, wow. Gosh. Oh, just imagine if Rob Zombie took that kind of break.
Oh, we can only
hope. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, so would I. So would I. Well, thank you, Nathan. I mean, just very quickly, we're going to be talking about our top threes. They're going to be our top what favourite holiday picks, and not necessarily Christmas themed, but one that I didn't make my top three, but only partly because I didn't see it properly until last night, was Lewis Jackson's Christmas Evil, which I had the pleasure of seeing on the big screen at a cinema in Bristol. And the first time I saw this film was back in, well, about 10, 15 years ago, and I bought the video in New York, and it's one of the worst video presentations I've ever seen. It was one of those EP tapes, which means it's barely watchable, with about 5 inches of videotape, and the whole film is on it. And so it didn't really strike a chord with me. And I've seen it a few times over the years. I've got the DVD, and again, it didn't really work for me, but it actually worked a lot better for me. So, excuse me, seeing it on the big screen. And I don't know why that was, but it just worked seeing it with an audience who very much saw it's a comedy, but laughing in the right places, I kind of guess. And I really liked it. It was funny, the cinema we saw it at is a really old cinema. It's kind of an art house place, and it was so cold in there. They had a basket of blankets out, so people were getting blankets out and putting them over their laps. That's how cold it was.
There's sort of a charm to that you don't get in a multiplex.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And it was good fun. And they're doing if you are around in the Bristol area, it's the Hellfire Video Club. And this is the fifth one they did. And they did we didn't stay for the second feature, but they did Elves, which I've not seen, which is from 1990. I don't know what it was about, but we had to leave after the first film. But they've done a Giallo double bill, and they're looking to potentially do what's that film? Boarding House. They're going to do Boarding House double bill or something else. So yeah. So if you fancy coming up to Bristol, I'll let you know when that is.
Flying out.
Well, that is our recently seen. What we'll do now, I think, is play a little bit of another heartwarming Christmas song, and then we'll go into our top threes. So we'll be back in a second.
Now, this is a story about a girl named Christmas. In fact, her name was Mary, just a tiny little girl in an orphanage home, but she sure had a lot of burdens to carry. Well, Mary's mommy and daddy got called to heaven, but Mary wasn't quite a year old. This is the story of little...
Yes, a very, very sad Christmas song. Eric, do you know any Marys?
Sorry?
Do you know any Marys, Eric?
I know plenty, yes.
Okay.
Because it's a very common name in Ireland, that's what you mean, yeah?
Yes, of course, I do, yes. Well, we'll have a few more Christmas songs, and hopefully some of them a little bit more upbeat than that one. But in the meantime, what we can do is our top threes, and they're all going to be holiday or festive related. So the first one we are going to go with, I think, is Joseph. And Joseph, here's your top three for everyone.
He loves me.
Why is it that the one day of the year...
He loves me not.
Everyone is afraid to be alone.
He loves me.
Is Valentine's Day.
He loves me not. He loves me.
Hello?
Valentine. Does someone want to be my Valentine?
Okay, Joseph, take it away.
All right, my number three is not the actual movie Valentine, but the art house maze sequence with Jessica Caulfield. She's being menaced by the killer, and basically she's stalked through this like labyrinth of paintings with some loud kind of techno-ish music blaring in the background. And eventually she's shot with an arrow, and it kind of causes her to tumble backwards over a railing, and where she falls to her death. But what I like about this scene is the actual paintings and the flashing lights and her like trying to maneuver away from the killer and him basically eventually getting to her. And I loved how they zoom from the killer's like hand, like pulling back the arrow all the way to his nose and then the blood coming out from the nose on his mask like it does throughout the movie, right before he shoots her. It's a really effective scene in that film, I think.
Hmm. Yeah, sorry, I forgot to say, we're not talking about the favourite festive films specifically, but it's about the moment, so just to clear that up. But
or different stuff doing with holidays in general.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
But that's my number three.
Okay, well, thank you. I've not seen Valentine for a long time. I remember seeing it at the cinema, and I probably said this before, but
it gets better with each viewing, I think.
Yeah, I'd like to see it again, actually, because I remember it kind of really was the tail end of the Scream boom, wasn't it? It was the film that kind of broke the camel's back, I kind of guess. It was the one film that did really badly, as I remember, probably unfairly, but it also got, it was heavily cut, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I did a review on Hysteria Lives way back when it came out, and I did not like it. Mm. But the more I watch it, I find stuff I appreciate about it, and I actually watched it again fairly recently, and then that scene really stood out, and I was like, wow. But the whole movie, you know, it's got its problems. It could stand for a director's cut, maybe, have its gore inserted, and there's a few things I would change about it, but overall it's a pretty fun little movie. It's kind of underappreciated.
I agree with you. I think that it gets better every time I watch it. I like it more than I did before. The only complaint I've ever had, you know, or I have now, I should say, is I really hate what they did with Denise Richards' big death scene, because I mean, come on. You've got her trapped in a hot tub and the killer menacing her with this drill. I mean, that could have been awesome. And then they kind of, you know, went a different route with it, which I didn't really care for. Hmm. I mean, they made it a boring death scene when it should have been one of the most entertaining ones.
It was probably one of the ones that got cut, wasn't it, I imagine? I don't know. It would be interesting to see. It would be great if we could get Jamie Blanks on the show, wouldn't it? Maybe we should try. Because then we can talk about Urban Legend and Valentine. And what was it? Storm? Was it
Storm Warning?
Storm Warning.
Yeah.
Which was quite good, I thought.
Yeah, wasn't
yeah
bad,
I agree. It was.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe we'll try. Eric, have you seen it?
Valentine, yeah. I did have. Like Joseph, I didn't like it when I first saw it. But it was one of those DVDs I picked up recently for 99p in the special shop in St. Helens in England. And I mean, it is good. It's certainly, after what we've put up with for the last 10 years, you know, it seems like a classic in comparison.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do like Jamie. I do like Jamie Blanks, though. I mean, I think Urban Legends is fantastic. I thought Storm Warning was really effective. Valentine would be my least favorite of his three slashers, if you want to call it that. But I still think it's quite good. And, you know, the cuts do affect it, you know, somewhat. So if it got a unrated release, I think it would be pretty interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
If you ask me, I think he's made a lot of good films. I don't think he's made specifically a great film yet, but I think he's got it in him to do so.
Ooh, okay. Yes. Okay. Right. Well, thank you, Joseph. Nathan, I think we've got you next, and here is your number three.
It's time for a crash course in terror at the dorm that ripped blood.
Oh, great.
What's wrong? The phone's dead.
Did you hear anything up on the roof?
You think we need to go up there?
Need to? Yeah, we don't need to do anything.
Ripped blood, where the only thing you'll learn is how to die. The Dorm That Ripped Blood, rated R.
Okay, Nathan.
First off, I love this movie. I think it's very underrated. And it's full of scenes that I really love, but it was hard to narrow it down. But I think one of the most effective scenes for me is you have Daphne Zuniga plays a college student who you know, her parents are coming to pick her up because originally she was supposed to stay with, you know, her friends and help, you know, clean out this old dormitory. But it turns out her grandmother's in the hospital, so her parents are coming to get her, take her to see her grandmother who's in the hospital. And, you know, basically the dad gets beat to death with, you know, this bat with nails in it, and the mom gets, you know, like strangled to death. And Daphne going to the car finds her parents' bodies and faints, and then the killer runs over her head. I think the family massacre is effective to me just because of, you know, how brutal the death scenes are. And, I mean, I think about the poor grandmother because she's in the hospital already. And now, I mean, this will probably kill her to find out that, you know, her family was, you know, murdered, you know, while they were on their way to see her. So I don't know why, but for some reason, Amanda Bynight's the one that brought that up. And I never really thought about it till then. And I was like, you know, it's true. The grandmother's already in the hospital, and now she's going to find out their family's been brutally murdered. It's not a very good Christmas for her, I'd say.
No. Probably not the best one she's ever had, I wouldn't have thought. But, yeah. Well, no, it's a good choice, because it's one of these – it's funny. It's actually some of these films you don't really think of as a holiday film or a festive film. Of course, this film, Dawn That Dripped Blood, or Pranks, is set just before Christmas, isn't it? Although it's not especially Christmassy as such. I mean, it's not like a film like Christmas Evil that really goes over the top into celebrating Christmas. But it's it's definitely a festive slasher. So yeah, it's a good choice. I mean, of course, it came out on Blu-ray. Was it this year or last year? And
this year,
and a really good version on Blu-ray, and it'd be fantastic to see more slashers getting the kind of treatment that the Dawn That Dripped Blood got. Was it from Synapse?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It was, wasn't it? Yeah. So good choice. Presumably Eric and Joseph, you obviously, I'm sure you've seen this film.
Yeah, and for a long time. Yeah, for a long time, all I had was sort of a ninth generation VHS. So the Blu-ray came as quite a revelation.
It's an effective movie. I mean, it has a really, really ballsy ending, too. I mean, a lot of slasher films didn't go that route, but it did.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, well, thank you.
You know what I mean.
Yes, I do. We do.
It doesn't work. Some movies can't pull it off, but Dormant Drip Blood was able to pull that ending off really well.
Oh, I've got a new sound clip.
Oh, you are awful, but I like you.
So it's my new one for today.
What the hell?
Well, and I usually don't do that either.
And you get your first one in.
Yes.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, well done. Okay, well, thank you very much. And Eric, your number three enigmatically hasn't got a sound clip, so can you tell us what it is?
That's because I was too busy partying all week. it's a scene from the remake of Black Christmas, the Glenn Morgan 2006 version. Now, this was rated 15s in the UK and Ireland, which usually means what you're about to see is quite tame. So I was really, really shocked when the scene comes along where a girl has her eyeballs plucked out. The killer eats one of her eyeballs, then sticks his fingers or her fingers into the victim's eye sockets and drags her along like a bowling ball. I just found it astonishing that this was a 15s rated film. And I mean, the original Black Christmas, which we'll be discussing shortly, is an 18s over here, probably because of language, I'd say, more than anything else. But for it to get away with a scene of gore that would rival anything in Hostel or Saw into a 15s rated movie was quite astonishing, I thought. As we'd said last week, I think it's a fun movie. I know a lot of people think it does a poo all over the original, but I would disagree.
Yeah. Well, no, we spoke about it last week, didn't we? And I was watching, we'll talk more about Black Christmas, obviously, properly in a minute, but rewatching Black Christmas and comparing the two, because we've already talked about the sequel, is that just realizing that remaking the original shot for shot almost, or it just wouldn't work for a modern audience. Rightly or wrongly, doesn't mean I don't love the original, but I think they probably sat down and thought, well, can we do this, or is it such a hoary cliche now of the killer being inside the house, that kind of thing? What can we do with it? And they, you know, personally, I quite like the way the direction they went with. So, and I was surprised as well, quite how gory it was. I mean, if you imagine a film like that, like Black Christmas, the remake, with that level of gore that had been released in the early 1980s, it would have been banned, wouldn't it, in Britain and Ireland?
Definitely, yes.
Yeah.
So, even with its jokey tone, it still would have.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. What about you guys? Because there was the other thing was they reshot stuff, didn't they? Because the there was a different version released in Britain and possibly Ireland.
I'm not sure if that scene was in the US theatrical version. And then we got there's one character who gets her top of her head lopped off with an ice skate that we didn't see. We see it in the deleted scenes on the DVD, but it wasn't in the actual theatrical version.
Yeah.
She had a different death scene. I can't remember what it was, but.
Well, I think that was the scene, like the scene you're talking about, you know, that you picked with the eyes and eating the eye. Like, they changed her death scene for the U.S. theatrical release to the ice skate scene. It's the same character.
Oh, is it? All right.
Was it? Okay. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, and then at the end, well, spoiler alert, at the end of the U.S. version, he gets impaled on a Christmas tree, whereas in our version, there's a scene at the end of the hospital. I can't remember how he dies, actually.
What, in the...
In the UK version. There's an electrocution, I know, but I know that...
Doesn't he get... He gets the paddles, whatever they are, to his chest, doesn't he? You know, the electrified paddles? Or does he come back... Is that in both versions? I can't remember.
Yeah. But, anyway, we didn't see anyone impaled on a Christmas tree in our version.
No. With the entrails wrapping around the tree.
Yes.
Which is a nice
gory
touch.
Close-up, yes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You're very quiet, Joseph. You're not a big fan of that film, are you?
No, I've tried to, you know, get into it for what it is, but I don't know, it just never sits well with me. Not a fan.
No, fair enough. Okay, well, let's see if you're a fan of the next one, which is my number three, Holiday / A Moment.
So the boy and girl are making out, right? When they hear over the radio that this lunatic killer's escaped from an insane asylum.
That's not the way it goes. The boy goes for help, and the girl stays in the car, and she hears this... like a scratching sound.
No, he's been decapitated.
No, he was gutted with a hook.
Oh my God.
You think he's dead?
We can't just leave him here.
Oh, tell me, little Miss Prelaw, what's the charge for manslaughter?
We make a pact. Right here and now we take the Tsar grave.
For the last year, four friends have kept a secret.
Are you on drugs?
No.
Well, then what is wrong?
I've had a rough year.
But not all secrets stay buried.
Somebody sent this to me.
Oh, my God.
Someone knows.
I know what you did last summer. Ooh.
What they thought would be a new beginning.
Toast to us.
Is becoming a dead end.
Somebody tried to kill you last night. We have to go to the police.
If he wanted me dead, he could have done it.
And the mistake they made...
It was an accident.
There was no accident. It was murder.
What if he's still alive? Hey!
What are you doing here?
Is coming back to haunt them.
Oh, my gosh.
He's after me, too.
I got a letter.
I got run over. Helen gets her hair chopped off. Ah! Julie gets a body in a trunk, and you get a letter? That's balanced.
He's waiting for us to unravel.
The wait is over.
What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for?
Hello?
I know what you did last summer.
Well, I love that trailer, and I'm not talking about the trailer apart from to say I can still remember seeing that at the cinema and being so excited to see that film in the wake of Scream and the resurgence of slasher movies, because I think we've spoken about it before and back pre-96, being a slasher movie fan was quite a lonely pursuit because nobody else really liked them. They were pretty much forgotten, and when I started Hysteria Lives, even then, it was still, even though Scream had been out, it was still seen as quite a marginal subgenre. But I remember seeing that trailer and being very excited for it, and also being surprised at how it is dismissed as trendy horror, in inverted commas. And the irony now is I kind of guessed this film and Scream are kind of retro horror now. So it's funny how things go around and come around. But the scene I wanted to talk about, and obviously the holiday is July the 4th, which we obviously don't celebrate in the UK because that was the date when America made the very foolish decision to dump Blighty. But is the scene where Helen, Sarah Michelle Gellar, is being chased by the fisherman, the killer, with a hook across the street in the town towards her sister's shop or the family shop, and her hammering on the door. And obviously it's a kind of a rehash of the famous Jamie Lee Curtis scene running to the house where she's babysitting with Michael Myers chasing her. But it's always effective. I think it just works really well. And I really like this film, and I really like the sequel. I've watched I'll Always Know What You Did Last Summer once, and I don't think I'll ever become a fan of that. But I do enjoy these films, and I think the more they age, the better the vintage gets. And so that's my pick. What about you guys?
Good choice.
Thank you.
Excellent choice, yes.
I think I love that chase scene. I think it's really well done. What always bothered me about that scene, and it's just the character, like her sister drives me crazy. I mean, she shows up, Helen shows up there like, you know, very disheveled, you know, like screaming hysterical. And the sister just acts like, oh, it's no big deal, whatever. I mean, the sister just hates Helen so much. She's so jealous of her that, like, even in a situation like that, she's still being a bitch for no reason. I mean, and then she's like, go lock the back door. And she just walks to the back door like all casual. I'm like, oh, you deserve to die for being so stupid.
She does. Mm. Was it in I Know What You Did Last Summer? They there was a scene, wasn't there? They couldn't film with a police car. They redid it in Scream 2. Is that correct?
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. No.
You know the one in Scream 2 where
where she has
crashes
to climb over the unconscious body. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm right in thinking they were trying to do that in I Know What You Did Last Summer, and they couldn't do it for whatever reason, whether it's budgetary or the directors couldn't do it properly or whatever. And so Kevin Williamson kept it for Scream 2. So anyway, that's some trivia. It might be true, might not be, but who knows? Joseph, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I like I Know What You Did Last Summer. I'm still a little I don't really care for the ending. I always thought it was a whodunit, and it basically is just that one guy, but that always kind of soured me. But I like the film, and I really like the scene you're talking about. I love when she's in that store, and there's all those I guess they're not really mannequins. They look like they're covered in plastic. It's been a while since I've seen it, but you know, obviously one of them is the killer. But one of my problems with I Know What You Did Last Summer, and not necessarily the sequel, because I loved her in the sequel, but in I Know What You Did Last Summer, Jennifer Love Hewitt's character is completely worthless. I mean, she doesn't really do anything. I mean, you know, Freddie Prinze Jr. has to do all the, you know, work against the killer, and she's much more effective as a final girl, and I still know what she did last summer, but I bet you like her love tops, though. Yeah, well, yeah, that's the only non-worthless part about her. But other than that, you know, I like the film, and I really like the scene that you picked as well.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And I think you know, if you're a regular listener, you are either looking forward to this or you are dreading it. But what can we do? The people speak, and we flush.
He's a cat. Flush in the toilet, he's a cat. Flush in the toilet, he's a cat. Flush in the toilet, he's a cat.
Okay, Joseph, here's your number two.
This holiday season, prepare to have the stuffing scared out of you. Thanksgiving. In the town of Plymouth, Massachusetts, the fourth Thursday in November is the most celebrated day of the year. The table is set. The festivities have begun. What uninvited guest has arrived? And this year, there will be no leftovers. White meat, dark meat, all will be carved. Thanksgiving.
Come on, Judy, how about it?
Happy Thanksgiving, baby.
Keeping with my non-Christmas theme picks, that's technically not a slasher film, but it should be. It's Eli Roth's Thanksgiving trailer, which is a kind of a fake trailer they used for the Grindhouse film. But I'd say it's probably the best thing he's ever done next to the first Hostel film, which I like and a lot of people don't. But what else can I say about it that wasn't explicitly sounded out in the trailer? I mean, this needs to be made right now. I mean, I love that whole... this Thanksgiving, prepare to have the stuffing scared out of you. I love that whole voiceover, and I love just the gritty feel. It really does feel like an 80s slasher film, a holiday-themed slasher film. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I love it. I would love to see it being made. Is there any news on it?
Well, they keep saying that it's going to be made, and then they're like, oh, well, we'll get to it eventually, and they still haven't. I just, you know, quit making all these other movies and make this. I want to see that right now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like it. The only thing I do think it's a shame. Is it Don Fontaine you're talking about, weren't you? The guy who does all the voiceovers.
Yeah, Don LaFontaine.
LaFontaine.
He passed away. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the voiceover is good, but it's not authentic, is it, if you know what I mean?
No, it's not quite as Don LaFontaine-esque, but it's pretty, I like, it's still pretty good. It fits with the trailer, I believe, I think.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Right.
I love it. I wish it was real. Oh, God, I wish it was real. Hmm. Oh, and I can't tell what is going on at the very end of that trailer. I mean, what's going on?
Someone stuffed like a turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that, but I mean, what's happening at the very end? Is he having sex with the turkey?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yes.
He is.
That's what he's doing. He's like, he's humping a turkey, basically.
Yeah, it's a human turkey.
It's a popular Christmas tradition, no?
In Ireland, maybe.
Yeah.
Is the human turkey dead when he's doing it?
Yes.
Here's somebody make noise.
Yeah. I didn't notice this before until we played the audio clip there. I never noticed they said coming this February at the end, which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah. It's Thanksgiving coming this February.
Yeah. And I was wondering if they do make these films, you know, when they did Machete and which was kind of one of those fake trailers they turned into a movie. But I kind of guess they have to reshoot everything, don't they?
Pretty much. So. They did for Machete.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but all the scenes that are in the Machete fake trailer end up in the film, as far as I could see.
Did they?
Yeah. It's quite well put together.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think Thanksgiving's the most authentic when, you know, they're going for that retro look. I think Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I mean, it really does look like an old slasher film.
Completely. And it looks really washed out. And I loved the trampoline sequence.
That's fantastic, isn't it? Yeah, really good.
That reminds me of the scene in Cutting Class they did on the trampoline where the guy was jumping and then he sticks the flagpole through the thing and he lands on it.
Ooh, ouch. Okay. Yes. Right. Well, thank you, Joseph. Nathan, you get your own little...
He's a cat. Flush in the toilet, 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 he's...
And here's your big number two.
Santa's watching, Santa's waiting. Christmas Eve is slowly fading. Can you hear him in the night? Close the door, turn out the light.
Okay, Nathan, what was that from?
That was from Silent Night, Deadly Night. Mm-hmm. I love the opening credits sequence. I kind of like the fact that they're playing this like this kid's song, which actually kind of has like, you know, like two meanings to it. I mean, you know, Santa's watching, Santa's waiting, you know, can you hear him in the night? I mean, it sounds kind of ominous in a way as well. And I like how, you know, the blood splatters on the screen in classic 80s cheese fashion, and then we get that you know, like crazy music behind it. I think it's really good opening sequence to that film, which I love that movie anyway. I think it's amazing.
It's a fun film, isn't it? It's a film I'd love to see on the big screen. I imagine that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think, funnily enough, without preempting everything, but certainly my number two is actually the same film. So I'll talk a little bit about the film. I didn't do this on purpose, but I think sometimes we'll do this. But I've got a different moment from the film I want to talk about. So, Eric, what are your thoughts on Silent Night, Deadly Night?
I actually do really like it. It's really, really cheesy, and it's impossible to see how people were offended by it back in the day, because it was, you know, picketed by the, you know, Bible bashers. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
Back in 1984. Yeah. Which, you know, I was it ever released on video in the UK? I don't remember ever seeing it available.
I don't think it was. I know the sequel was banned. But yeah, I mean, why the sequel will be banned, I don't know, but we might talk about
that. Oh, I know why.
Okay.
Because it's terrible.
Well, Joseph, what's your thoughts on Silent Night, Deadly Night?
I love it. You know, I love the antler scene. It's really cheesy, like Eric says, the whole film. I love the stigma that it was carried with it, with all the Bible thumpers, you know, protesting. And it's one of those films. It's a product of its time, and I appreciate that about it.
Okay. Right.
Well, 84 must have been a slow year, because that's what they picked to protest. You know, they're always protesting something. They're always bitching about something. Like, Joseph and I live in the Bible Belt, and it's always complaining about something. You know, that's what they picked at the time, I guess.
I don't think it's as bad today as it was back then. It's not really that bad around here anymore.
No, I think it's with those kind of films, it's what you'll find is most people have not watched them. It's like Mary Whitehouse, who was famous in the UK as the kind of the lead leader against video nasties. And she did the Thingy of Light. I can't remember what it's called now, but it's like a religious order. But it was kind of loads of old biddies who were like protesting against violent movies. And someone asked her, have you ever seen a video nasty? And she said, oh, no, I would never watch a video nasty. And so she didn't really know what the films were like. And it's kind of most times is when I was a kid, we were talking about video nasties and saying about horror films, and when I was too young to actually seen any of them, and they all sounded far, far worse than they actually were. They sounded much more horrific. And of course,
well, if you ask me, if you're going to oppose them, you should at least watch them. Exactly. See what you're opposing. Yeah.
And I'm sure the parents that were outside doing, you know, the protests hadn't watched the film. Having said that, when TriStar put it out in the States, it didn't do very well. I mean, it flopped pretty much. And it got pulled. It did. They did basically, you know, stop it becoming a hit, because it did get pulled from lots of theatres in the States because of the protesters. And I think sometimes those things work a bit like with Snuff, the film by Roberta Finlay and her husband. You know, the 1970s, early 70s movie where it was pretending it was a snuff movie if it wasn't, and they hired people to protest outside of the cinema, and they got lines around the block. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. A bit like with Nightmares and a Damaged Brain, and the guy who went to prison for 6 months in the UK for distributing a copy of it that was longer than the BBFC accredited version. And, you know, we think now that would be absolutely, you can't believe that would have happened, but it did happen. So it's a salient reminder of things, goes, what goes around comes around, and who knows what the next thing's going to be. But I have a feeling Silent Night, Deadly Night is going to come up again. So, Eric, I'm going to give you a little bit. Do you want a little bit?
Yes, please. He's a cat.
Very little bit. Here you go. Oh. It's your number two.
Carpet Day!
Okay, Eric, what was that from?
That is from the discussed about 2 seconds ago, Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, which I think Nathan described as awful. And I would agree there. I think it is awful. But
that was me.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Nathan loves that film, probably. Yeah.
Does
Nathan
probably love it?
I was suspicious because it's so awful that only somebody like Nathan could like it. But no, in its defense, I do think the second half of it is quite fun. The first half, as people who have seen it will know, is all flashback footage to part one. But that scene where he says, "Garbage Day," he shouts it as if it's a well-known catchphrase, like something Arnold Schwarzenegger would say in an action film. Unless I'm mistaken, Garbage Day isn't a well-known catchphrase, is it, in the States?
No.
You don't go around saying Garbage Day to each other, no?
No.
I think the one of the things I like about Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 is that actor is so awful. His idea of, conveying madness is just to open his eyes as wide as possible without blinking. And I know it's supposed to be sort of comedic and that, but, even still. And there's absolutely no Christmas atmosphere at all in that film. I mean, the first one, it feels like Christmas. This feels like it was shot in the middle of the summer. I don't think there's even a Christmas tree to be seen.
It must be one of the cheapest sequels ever made, mustn't it?
Yeah. It's a bit the only John, I was discussing Exorcist 2 last week.
Yeah.
I was reading since I spoke to you last, I've been reading The Making of Exorcist 2, the book by Barbara Pellenberg. And they said that their original intention was to do a kind of Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 with it and use outtakes and alternate angles from the original movie and just sort of make a movie around that. Which is really? What they've done with Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 is just use the exact same footage for the first 40 minutes and then 40 minutes of new footage.
It's very strange, isn't it?
I don't think you could get away with that now.
No. Mm. If they'd done it with the Exorcist 2, that would have been quite, well, I don't know. Would it have been good or maybe not?
Yeah. I still stand by The Heretic as being a work of genius, but I know I'm alone.
Yes.
Mm. Okay. I still need to see it. Mm. I dream that alone, I watched
Eric.
It.
I like it.
Hmm?
I said, you're not alone, Eric. I like it for all the wrong reasons.
Well, I like it for sort of right and wrong reasons.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'll like it.
Okay. Well, I'm
like
sure.
Everything.
Well, I was going to say, because we're on a Silent Night, Deadly Night kick, it will come as no surprise after this.
He's a cat.
That my number two is this.
The night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring. Not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. Remember, he only looks like Santa Claus. You've made it through Halloween. Now try and survive Christmas. Silent Night, Deadly Night, rated R.
Starts Friday at a theater near you.
Yeah, just a surprise. Silent Night, Deadly Night, the original. And the moment, the reason why it isn't a problem that we chose the same films, because I knew you were choosing moments from films, and the moment from, there's two moments from this. One is the sleigh ride killing, where the guy, teenager, is on a sleigh and going down a hillock, sandy hillock, and then the killer swings a sharp object and decapitates him. Now, the film was originally going to be called Sleigh Ride, so it's kind of built around that image anyway. The other one is the ubiquitous Linnea Quigley and her killing. And I think she's babysitting, isn't she, in this? So it's a kind of throwback to Halloween, if I'm remembering correctly. And the killer, dressed as Santa, obviously, picks her up and pushes her into antler horns on the wall. And the tips of the antler horns exit through her breasts. And so really, it's a kind of perfect slasher movie murder. It's got boobs, it's got blood, and it's got the tacky kind of novelty value. That's why I really like it. And it's and of course the other great thing about Silent Night, Deadly Night is the evil nun, the most evil nun ever caught on celluloid. And she's just like, she's got a German accent, hasn't she? And she's kind of like a Nazi nun. So I quite really like the fact that you've got that kind of, you know, Nazi nun and...
Nunzi,
exactly. It's a new word. So that's my number two. Anything left to say on the Silent Night, Deadly Night franchise?
I love the ending to part one. You know, a lot of people, spoiler, everybody. A lot of people get mad because they wanted to see the nun die at the end. But I think it's actually a lot more, you know, ominous that you see the brother look up at her and, like, realize, oh, okay, yeah, she's evil. Like, I'm going to kill her.
Mm. I feel kind of bad because when you asked me what I thought of Silent Night, Deadly Night, I said I really liked the antler scene, and then that was your pick before you actually got
Joseph.
To talk about
you.
Yeah. Yes. Has anyone I've watched during the week?
Hey, wait a minute. I got a pun. Punish me. I've been naughty.
Oh, you are awful, but I like you.
It was a Silent Night, Deadly Night pun. It was in the movie.
Okay.
Has anyone seen part three? I watched it for the first time during the week and thought it was beyond awful.
No.
I haven't seen it.
Hasn't that got the killer in a coma with a kind of a bowl on his head?
Yeah, it's played by Bill Moseley. Okay. And it's really, really, really bad. And again, no Christmas atmosphere. I don't think there's a Christmas tree to be seen again. You have to have a Christmas tree in a Christmas movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either, but Reese Donnell submitted a review for it on The Body Count Continues, and I think he like half liked it and half didn't. But it's one I haven't seen yet. I like the end movie tagline: "Silent Night, Deadly Night 3, better watch out." I think that's kind of I like that.
Which was, of course, the original title for Christmas Evil, wasn't it?
Yes.
And it's Lewis Jackson's preferred title for his film. So we are coming on to our number ones. So the fairy on top of the Christmas tree for Joseph is this.
This town is accursed. You know, it started 20 years ago. It was the night of the Valentine's Day dance at the Union Hall. The biggest event of the year. It had been a tradition for over 100 years. Everybody was there except for 7 miners who were out at the Hanniger mine. 5 of them still down below. 2 supervisors were waiting for the men to come up. Anxious to get to the party, they left before the men were safely out, failing to check the methane gas levels in the tunnels down below. Five men were buried alive as the town continued its party. For 6 weeks, we dug around the clock to try to save them. After we broke through, one man was found alive. I was the one who found. Harry Warden spent the next year in the state mental hospital. Exactly 1 year later, on Valentine's Day, he came back to town. He killed the 2 supervisors who had left their posts the year before. Then he cut out their hearts and stuffed them into heart-shaped candy boxes. That night at the dance, he found the boxes, blood dripping out the sides. Inside was a note, a warning from Harry. Never to hold a Valentine's dance ever again. And every February 14th, Harry comes back to town, his pickaxe stained with blood, waiting in the shadows of the Hanniger mine,
just for someone to kill, should they not heed his warning?
Okay, Joseph, obviously not a Christmas one, but why do you choose that?
No Christmas presents in my top threes this week, but I don't know. I think this scene really kind of sets a tone for the whole film. It's, you know, it's kind of bookended by such lighthearted character interactions, and then, you know, he starts telling that story, and then things get really sinister and serious and rather bloody. Of course, we've already covered My Bloody Valentine to the hilt, so, I mean, what else can I say that, you know, hasn't already been said? I just think it's a really good moment of a kind of slasher movie exposition.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, like you say, we have covered the film in an earlier podcast about...
We did two episodes for that film.
We did, yes. And we had an extra mini-sode, didn't we? So, yeah, but one of
Lots of interviews for that particular film.
Yeah, yes. Which we've...
Haven't heard those, go back and listen to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
God bless that cast. Because it's so hard to get interviews and to find, so many willing to do it. That was awesome.
Yeah, speaking of interviews, we tried for today, but things fell through, so no interviews this week.
We are trying, though. It's not through lack of trying, is it?
That's right, we do.
We're on a bit of what's the right word for it? A bit of a dry patch at the moment, but we will get onto wet patch, I'm sure, soon, won't we?
Ooh.
Yes.
So, is there anything else to say about My Bloody Valentine? And
I don't think I've seen it.
Haven't you seen it?
Really?
No.
Doesn't ring a bell. That out, Eric.
It's okay. I mean, I've seen better. You know, Savage Waters a lot better.
It's got Jensen Ackles in it.
It's got who?
Jensen Ackles is in it.
or as Justin calls him, Jensen's ankles. Bend over.
Yeah, but Justin, you committed blasphemy. You said you didn't like him in it.
You are awful, but I like you.
Sorry, I didn't catch that. What, blasphemy? Blasphemy. They've all got it. No, that's infamy, isn't it?
Blasphemy for you because you said you didn't like Jensen Ackles in that movie.
Did I? Oh, no, I did.
You said he was bland.
He was quite bland in it, yes. But, yes.
He's not around to be a good actor, though. He's around for eye candy.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
Which he fails on.
No, he does not.
Not everyone.
I have no... I'm going to let you three girls, you know, sort this out. I'm going to sit back here and, you know, drink some eggnog, even though I don't like eggnog.
He's eye blandy, if you ask me.
Oh, not everyone can be Bob Hoskins. Thank God. Okay. So, thank you, Joseph. I think we better move on swiftly to Nathan's number one. Okay, Nathan, what was that from?
That was from Don't Open Till Christmas, which I think is an extremely underrated movie and deserves a lot more attention than it gets. Mm. Because you have to remember, you know, it was the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring. They were all dead. Mm. I love that tagline. I love the opening credits sequence because actually it's a really creepy opening credits for such a cheesy movie because it's, you know, it's kind of an eerie version of Jingle Bells being played while you see this really weird looking Santa. It looks like a little statue or something. And then it gets lit on fire. And then I guess you realize it's a candle. It's like wax. And as it melts down, there's a blade behind it, which I thought was really well done. And I just love that music. But yeah, I love the movie too. God, it's so awesome. And what else can I say? It's that good.
And it's coming out, isn't it, on DVD? It's out now, actually, on Region 1. I haven't got it yet. I keep on meaning to order it. It's got my quote on the front cover.
Oh, I want it. I didn't know it was.
What's your quote?
I can't remember. Someone have a look. See what it is. But
does that special features? Do you know?
Yes, it has a 52-minute documentary that was shot at the time.
making.
Okay, that's it. I must have it.
Yeah. Mm. It looks amazing, actually, because I've seen clips of it on YouTube, but it's got Dick Randall, and it's following him around London, and while they're filming that, and not Slaughter High, but that kind of around before, it's obviously made before Slaughter High. But yeah, it's difficult to fathom that a film like Don't Open Till Christmas was shot in the UK at the same time, you know, the whole Video Nasty debate was starting to kick off. So, yeah, it's...
Here is your quote, Justin, on the cover of the Mondo Macabro reissue. It says, "Enough oddity, sleaziness and mirth-inducing badness to tickle the fancy of any 80s slasher aficionado."
Ah, well, there you go. Mm. I still haven't got a free copy from them, so if you're listening...
Yeah, I think you would.
Yeah, but I never do. I never do. But anyway...
Oh.
Okay. Yes. Well. Thank you, Nathan. But the reason I'm not going to go talk a little more about it is because the next choice is a very similar choice, and here it is.
Seven, go.
Okay, Eric, what was that
from? My pick is also music related to Don't Open Till Christmas, and that is Carolyn Monroe, who cameos out of nowhere as herself in the film. I don't know if she was trying to launch a pop career for herself at the time.
I think she was.
Was she?
Yeah, I think she was. Yeah.
All right. Well, she appears singing that fantastically cheesy and catchy song, which I know Justin will hate, but I think it's brilliant.
I like it. No, I like it.
Do you? All right. Yeah. I'm surprised.
I put it on.
Yeah. So she appears in like a sort of red, shiny, tight dress, in huge hair, singing this song. Some kind of stage pyrotechnics are supposed to happen, but instead, what happens is a dead Santa with a meat cleaver in his face appears from this elevated platform. And hence the screaming of poor Mrs. Monroe. Mm. But I would agree with Nathan. I think it's underappreciated. And certainly I was guilty of that when I saw it first. From the makers of Pieces. So what can possibly go wrong? Or possibly go right, even.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's certainly not in the cheesy league of Pieces. But I think you'll get a kick out of it anyway.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's certainly not a good film. Is it?
No. But it's entertaining.
Yeah,
it's never boring.
No, absolutely. And it was directed by Edmund Purdom,
who
stars in it. And he played the principal in Pieces. And mm-hmm. Alan Lake, who was married to Diana Dawes, killed himself.
He
shortly
did
after.
Shortly after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on that cheery note. Anything else you want to say about Don't Open Till Christmas, Nathan, or Eric?
Well, even though I'm flat broke, I'm still going to have to buy the DVD because I want to see that 52-minute documentary.
Yeah, same here. Mm. Absolutely. Great. Well, we came back. This is my last one, and it's not from Don't Open Till Christmas, but it is a Christmas choice.
We interrupt this program for a special announcement. A man described as a homicidal maniac has escaped from the hospital for the criminally insane. He is 6'3" tall, 210 pounds, dark eyes, bald, and may be wearing a Santa Claus costume taken from a shop in Burley. All residents of the county are warned to be on the lookout for this man and to phone the police if they see him. We now continue our program of carols for Christmas Eve.
Well, there you go. That's proof, if needed, that there's nothing new under the sun. That was from 1972's, I think, Tales from the Crypt, which is the Amicus anthology, which we talked about some of that in the past couple of weeks. And that particular episode of the anthology was, I think it's All Quiet Through the House, was it? I think that's the name of it, or something like that anyway. And it has Joan Collins from Dynasty and lots of other TV and films, and killing her husband and not being able to phone the police because she's being menaced by an escaped lunatic dressed as Santa Claus. And I won't give away the ending because the ending definitely makes it. But I do love the whole thing. I love the whole central conceit, if that's the right word for it, of the idea that Joan Collins can't phone the police because she's killed her husband and there's a killer outside trying to kill her. And I just think that works really, really well. And again, like I say, there's nothing new under the sun because essentially it's a plot for a slasher movie in 1972. And so, yeah, that's my top pick for holiday horrors, holiday slashers. Well, you guys, I mean, we've spoken about this a little bit before, but yeah, I think this is probably the first Santa slasher, isn't it?
Yeah, and I really love it. I think they kind of expanded on it. I mean, I don't say it's as good, but they kind of, you know, redid it for the Tales from the Crypt TV show with Mary Ellen Trainer, and it was kind of a faithful reimagining of that. And I thought they were, you know, they expanded on it a little bit, but without, you know, outdoing the original. But, you know, I really love that segment. That's easily the best segment in that film. That Santa is, you know, really, really terrifying to look at.
Really creepy.
And, you know, yeah, like you said, the ending to that, you know, that whole story is just, whoa.
Yeah. And was it Larry Drake who played the Killer Santa in the remake? Wasn't
yeah. Dr. Giggles, Larry yeah. Drake, yeah.
And also the guy from Dark Knight, the Scarecrow as well, wasn't he?
Yep.
He was the Bubba. Yeah. So, well, that's my number one.
It has a big jump scare in it, too. I think you know what I'm talking about, but there's one scene that I nearly jumped out of my chair when I first watched it because I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
When he reaches out to grab her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very no, it's just great. I love that film.
So, my only problem with it is that it should have been filmed in the 80s because Joan Collins belongs in shoulder pads.
Yeah. Oh, okay. She looks very glamorous in this, though, isn't she?
She is glamorous, but she's not as glamorous as she was in the 80s in Dynasty.
No. Okay.
Dynasty?
Dynasty, whatever.
Yeah. Dynasty? Okay.
Well, before we get on to our feature presentation, I'm just going to play a little bit of another song for Christmas for you. And here's, let's see if you guys can guess the slasher movie connection with this song.
Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, had a very shiny
Okay, have you guessed
was that Susie?
It's Toya, actually. Oi. But have you guessed what the slasher movie connection is?
The only thing I could guess is that her warbly voice makes me want to commit slasher movie murders.
It's not a woman.
Is the singer? Is it the singer? Is the clue? Is it?
Yes, it's not a woman singing.
Oh, I thought it was Mrs. Mills for a minute.
Okay, well, actually, it's, I'll say it's not a woman, it's actually Tiny Tim. Is that ringing bells?
Oh.
He was in the film...
Blood Song.
Blood Harvest.
Blood Harvest, that's right.
Blood Harvest, yes.
Yes.
Blood Harvest.
And also was made a creepy appearance in, well, not him, but his singing voice, in Insidious as well. If you remember that, the song where the little Victorian boy turns up when they move house. So, but Tiny Tim, I don't think is with us anymore, but his music will live on.
Yes, so, in all our hearts,
and all our.
Oh, it's Tiny Tim! It's Christmas Day.
Well, that is Christmas for you. But what we're going to do, I think, now is I think we should move on to our feature presentation, and we're very excited to be covering a classic. And here is a trailer for 1974's Black Christmas.
Hello? Who are you? For God's sake, what are you doing?
Who is it?
Okay, Joseph.
The college town of Bedford is receiving an unwelcomed guest this Christmas. As the residents of Sorority House Pi Kappa Sig prepare for the festive season, a demonic stranger begins to stalk the house. A series of grisly, obscene phone calls start to plague the residents of the sorority, and soon they will each meet their fate at the hands of a psychotic intruder. As the police try to trace the phone calls, they discover nothing is as it seems during this Black Christmas. You know, John Carpenter's Halloween may have paved the way for Friday the 13th to kickstart the tried-and-true slasher craze, but it was Bob Clark's terrifying Black Christmas in my eyes that truly shines as the greatest example of the slasher film, or proto-slasher if you want to get technical. No hyperbole here. Black Christmas is one of the greatest films I've ever seen, and is and always will be my all-time favorite slasher film. Many come close, some even try, but nothing has matched it. Yes, even Halloween, which I'm not knocking in the least. It deserves all the praise it can get. But for my money, nothing sets my teeth on edge like Billy and his blood-curdling phone calls and Jess's fate with facing this faceless stranger alone on a cold, wintry evening in the isolated sorority house. Black Christmas, to me, gets everything right. The characters are rich in detail. Each possess very human qualities, and never once do they wink at the camera and signal that they're in a piece of fiction. Everything just feels real, from the pregnancy tug-of-war between Jess and Peter to Barb's insecure, foul-mouthed alcoholic character. And if I haven't already mentioned it, I will now. Black Christmas isn't just scary, it's actually really bone-chilling, even nearly 40 years later since its release. The fact that they, and I will be getting into heavy spoiler territory here, you know, the fact that they decided to kind of leave the psychotic Billy as just some random psycho, you know, without a face, without a motive, and without real closure to who he is, it's much scarier than, you know, any film where someone rips off a mask and, you know, exposits a lot of dialogue in rapid-fire manner. No offense to those types of films, you know, I certainly love them, but for me, Black Christmas works so well because it's real. People are people. We don't often have everything spelled out for us. People die, and sometimes the psychos don't get caught. The final moment when Jess is left alone in the house, and that might be the tiniest flaw I could find, the fact the cops actually leave her alone, but I can easily forgive that. But the final moment when she's left in the house and the phone begins to ring for the last time, it's really exceptional. Black Christmas is truly an amazing experience, and I do have much more to say about it, but for now, I will turn it over to Nathan.
Oh, Black Christmas, my second favorite movie of all time. It isn't quite Texas Chainsaw perfect, but it's very, very close to near perfection. You know, obviously, the phone calls are very scary, and in the intro, you know, you played a clip where, you know, he just says, "I'm going to kill you." And it's interesting because he's calling this, like, really obscene phone call and, you know, just saying all kinds of stuff to them. And then when Barb kind of, you know, like, gives it back to him, his voice just gets really calm and clear. And he just says, "I'm going to kill you." Because, you know, through most of the movie, he doesn't actually talk to the people that he's, you know, like, going at, like, he's, you know, harassing. He doesn't actually talk to them. It's more like he's given a dialogue of his childhood. That was the only scene I could think of where he actually, you know, is talking to her, you know, telling her he's going to kill her. I thought that was very, like, chilling. And I'm very sorry if you hear noise. My cat has gone insane.
That's
settle
okay.
down. Oh,
you show that fuzzy who's boss.
Yeah, exactly.
She's running down the stair railing.
My God. Pussy possessed.
He's a party cat.
Yeah.
He's a cat.
Anyway.
Messing with Nathan.
Flush the toilet. She's upset.
Aww.
And one thing, I get a lot of people who say, you know, that they don't understand, like, what the phone calls mean or anything. And I just want to take this moment to educate people. Billy, when he was a kid, had a baby sister named Agnes, and he molested her. And through his fear that she was going to tell what he did, I take it he either killed her or, you know, he did something really, really bad. I'm thinking he killed her. And his parents come home and found out, and, you know, that's when all hell broke loose. And I'm guessing he tried to kill his parents as well. That's basically his childhood. And you could piece that together if you've seen this movie 50 times like I have.
Yeah, I'm glad you're spelling that out for everyone, but I don't think it, you know, it's nice that you spelled that out, but I don't get a lot of people who don't understand that. I mean, it's right there. I mean, if you listen, it tells a story.
Yeah, but I'm watching movies with Jamie and Scott. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
What's that mean, huh?
Yeah, oh my God. Not to get off on a tangent here, but Scott, he is the biggest know-it-all I've ever seen in my life. Anytime we watch a movie, he's like, wait a minute, those bullets wouldn't fit that gun. Wait a minute, it says this was set in 1945. That airplane right there, I know that's from the 60s. Wait a minute,
how about
that movie was filmed in 79. That's an 81 convertible.
Corvette. That was Corvette. Last night, by the way.
Well, and last night, and then what was funny is later, during one scene, he wanted to tell us something else that was wrong, and he was like, oh, I saw another faux pas the movie made. And I was like, what, that lamp in the corner's from 91? I mean, he's just, oh, God, he's such a know-it-all. Anyway, I digress.
For Christmas, I'll get him a muzzle.
There you go. Yeah, and the movie's just very, very creepy. You know, it has this overlying sense of dread, even during the, you know, that kind of comical scenes. You know, there's always that body in the attic that's just, you know, like, there to remind you of the horror that's awaiting, you know, these unfortunate girls. And, of course, the ending is very chilling. And, you know, I mean, there's not a whole lot more I can say about it. It's just, you know, a near-perfect film.
How about you, Justin?
Yeah, well, I love Black Christmas. I mean, I saw it when I was a kid on TV. And famously, well, not famously, I think I've spoken about this before, saying that when it played originally on BBC, like the terrestrial TV, probably back in the, I don't know, late 70s, early 80s, the swearing, they played the wrong version. And I've talked about this before. And before I talk about it a little bit more, I've just got another quick trailer here, which has got some interesting changes to dialogue, and see if you can see what they've changed here.
Remember those idyllic scenes out of your childhood? Crisp winter nights, star bright, sleigh bells, crackling Yule logs, candlelight glistening off of shimmering Christmas trees, chestnuts roasting over open fires, carolers beneath snow-covered window ledges. Remember those? Remember them well. After Black Christmas, they'll never be the same again.
A high school girl's been murdered. Mr. Harrison's daughter is missing. And now at the house where she lives, the other girls are getting obscene phone calls.
Hello? 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 Hey, quiet! It's him again! The Mona!
Expanded his act.
If this movie doesn't make your skin crawl, it's on too tight.
Yes, well, that's... Did you notice the change?
Yes.
They left out the C word.
They changed they changed that a C word, even though they used the C word twice before it. So when I saw it originally on BBC and they left the C word in, and you, no one had ever said the C word on BBC One ever before that. And the next time they changed it, they re-recorded some of the stuff. And my little surprise for everyone is I've got the recording here from the next time the BBC showed it in the late 70s. I was going to play a little bit of it here.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello, is that Mr. Ekbar?
Hey, quiet! It's him again, the Mona!
Mrs. Slocum here, your next door neighbor. I wonder, would you do me a favor? Would you go to my front door, bend down, and look through the letterbox? And if you can see my pussy... Would you drop a sardine on the mat?
It's barely his act.
Could that be one person?
No, Claire, that's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir doing their annual obscene phone call.
Well, there you go.
I noticed the difference there.
Did you notice the difference?
Yeah. See, actually, Justin, when you said I got some dialogue additions, I thought you were going to say, quiet, it's him again, the moaner, and then a toy was going to come on or something.
Yeah,
that was better, though.
That'd be typical of you.
So you surprised me, old man.
Well, I'm glad I did.
Slocum.
Sorry?
I love Mrs. Slocum.
Oh, she's wonderful, isn't she? But it's only because of the change, when they changed it to pussy in the previous one, I thought, well, who else would have a good pussy joke? And what I'm going to do, what I'm planning to do is a little Christmas present for people on the website is actually do Mrs. Slocum's pussy versus Black Christmas on YouTube, and put in lots of pussy talk while the video of them all standing around looking appalled. I think it'd be quite a nice little thing, wouldn't it? So, but anyway, that was my little Christmas present for you. But as far as Black Christmas goes, I love it, and I watched it the other night, and I still really, really love it. The only thing I would say, if I was going to be critical of it, is now I could see how, for a modern audience, it probably would be a little slow in some ways. I think, watching it again, maybe because I knew what happened, there was bits it could be tightened up a little bit. That's the only criticism I could possibly have of it. I also love Mrs.
Modern
Mac.
Audience.
Well, yeah, the 70s movies are always a little bit more deliberately paced, but I think there's bits in it where, for instance, you've got like the Margot Kidder character who it just vanishes for half the film. But apart from that, it's pretty much the perfect slasher movie, and I love it to death. And it's got peppered with incredibly scary moments, which you just don't really get anymore. So yeah, I love it. How about you, Eric?
Yeah, I love it too, I have to say. What I found surprising about it is that it really hasn't dated at all. For a film that's 30, well, same age as me, it's nearly 38 years old at this stage, it's still suspenseful. And the humour in it I find really terrific. Margot Kidder, to me, is the standout actress in the film, without a doubt. Every moment she's on screen, she's, hilarious. But that's not to say the film is sort of overrun by comedy, because it's not. It doesn't have any sort of slapstick, and the comedy comes very naturally just from the interaction between the different characters. I would not consider it my favourite film of all time. I'm more of a fan of the more traditional slasher, like Halloween and Friday the 13th, but I do love Black Christmas. And probably the reason for that is I came to Black Christmas quite late. It was not something that was readily available on VHS when I was growing up, and I didn't see it probably till the mid-90s, again on television, like Justin did. But I do love it. I'd love to see a really, really top quality print of it, because the DVD I have is a bit naff, and I hear that the Blu-ray that came out in the States a couple of years ago isn't up to scratch really either, because it does get quite dark in places, but I suppose that suits the tone of the movie. And it's probably the most Christmassy of all the Christmas slashers. I mean, I was talking there about how how Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 and what was the other one I was saying, didn't have any Christmas atmosphere, Part 3 I suppose as well, didn't have any Christmas atmosphere at all, whereas this one really feels festive, if that's the right word you can use for a horror film. But I do love it, and as you said, Justin, it is quite slow. A modern audience, I don't think, would take to it in the same way that we have sort of grown up with it in the 80s and 90s. Well, the 90s for me. Yeah, you do need patience with it, definitely. And it's not a gore fest either, by any means. But there's that scene with where Margot Kidder is murdered seemed very Dario Argento-esque to me. I don't know if anyone picked up on that with all the glass ornaments. It was like, it reminded me of the, maybe sort of the tail end of Suspiria.
Yeah, well, I suppose the bird with the crystal plumage was quite a big drive-in hit in the States, wasn't it? So I imagine Bob Clark would have seen it. And so I'm sure he probably did sort of take elements from, you know, those other films. Because, again, as we always say, that no film's made in a vacuum. So something probably influenced Bob Clark. This idea, and especially as the fact is, Bob Clark is more really known for comedy, isn't he?
Yeah, that's what surprised me, because he went on to do the Porky's films, which is a genre of comedy I really don't take to at all, and I'm surprised that he's so restrained in Black Christmas. I mean, there's great humour, especially when you know, the house mother seems to have a little flagon of whiskey, you know, stashed in every possible place, you know.
Justin does that. He keeps whiskey hidden all throughout the house.
In the cistern,
Not anymore. I've drunk it all.
Yeah. Has anyone ever phoned up the police and given their phone number as fellatio? Is that, phone number is fellatio? Yeah.
Did this morning.
Oh. Mm.
Yeah. Did they fall for it?
Yes.
They're coming to get me.
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh, you are awful, but I like you.
Do you know what that's from? I don't think Eric probably does. Do you, Eric?
It sounds like Kenneth Williams, but I can't be sure. This is your area of expertise rather than mine.
Yeah, so it's Dick Emery.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yes. So, but
that's who that is, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
You don't know who that is?
No.
Oh. Well, I shall educate you.
And speaking of Mrs. Slocum, you may need to sit down for this, Justin, but I've never, ever, ever, ever seen an episode of Are You Being Served?
You're joking.
Really? Yeah.
No.
Whoa.
My goodness.
I know.
That's incredible.
Can you believe it?
No. Well, that's your mission, isn't it? Because in America, that was popular, wasn't it? Very popular in the 80s, wasn't it? 90s.
Yeah, it's like that, Keeping Up Appearances and Fawlty Towers.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and Eric, what you've got, you wanted to say something else, didn't you?
Yeah. I love the way they use the point of view camera, because normally in a slasher, it's kind of just somebody, a camera roaming through the woods, where in this instance, you have the camera climbing through windows and climbing down ladders from the attics, and it's really, really inventive. And I don't think that slashers have done that since, having such a dexterous use of the point of view camera.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an influence on Halloween, wasn't it?
Yeah, but Halloween, again, it sort of glides downstairs, and it doesn't do the you know, climbing up into the attic. I mean, I can imagine
whoever did that had to be wearing one of those braces on their chest that held the camera.
I know, that must have been pretty strong.
Climbing up, you know, the trellis outside with the camera, that had to have been, you know, rather difficult, I'd imagine.
I mean, the other thing that strikes me when you're watching Black Christmas, which is very different from the later slashers, is it's one of the last slashers that I remember has got that kind of, you know, it's got that kind of raving lunacy. Do you know what I mean? That kind of, you know, like Michael Myers is, and Jason Voorhees are kind of studied versions of passive aggressive in some ways, almost, because they're very aggressive, but they're very reserved, whereas the killer in this is a raving lunatic, isn't he? So, which
he's very
which
is kind of outspoken,
yeah, which is kind of an old-fashioned, in some ways, I kind of guess, version of an you know, someone with mental illness,
and a potty mouth that would put Eddie Murphy to shame.
Exactly. Oh yeah,
I know. So, but we're going to come back.
Go on. I love how flawed the heroine is in it too. I mean, you think about it. I mean, I really like her, but she's really kind of a bitch in some scenes. I mean, like, she does not have any consideration for, like, Peter's feelings at all regarding the baby. I mean, I understand her point of view, but she's also very selfish. I mean, like, later when he calls her a selfish bitch, you know, he goes, "You're talking about killing a baby as though you were having a wart removed." It's so true. I mean, it's like kind of an afterthought for her. Like, "Oh yeah, I'm just going to abort this baby. I don't care what Peter thinks."
Well, the thing is about her is that she has that kind of demeanor where she's not doing it just out of pure hatred. She's doing it because she feels it's the right way. I mean, it makes her come off as a bitchy, but you know, it's more realistic that way. You know, that she's doing it for the right reasons rather than the wrong reasons.
Yeah, and I like that she went that route. I just think that she feels like a real person that way. Where yes, she's kind of selfish, and you know, it definitely is kind of bitchy, but like not like she's not meaning to be. That's why she's such a well-written character.
Definitely.
Before we get onto the feedback, what are your thoughts about the identity of the killer? And because there was kind of obviously lots of controversy, and there's kind of you know, it's left very open, isn't it, that Peter, you know, as we said with spoiler, it isn't the killer because she kills him because she thinks he's a killer. But obviously the ending is her on her own, the phone ringing, which is to indicate that the killer is still there.
Well, you see him in the attic too, because when the cops leave the house, you hear him go, "Agnes, it's me, Billy." Like he's still in the attic, and you see him rustling around up there.
I mean, do you know what the original intention was? Because I've got a feeling.
Well, some of the facts I got about the film. Now, this may be, you know, old hat to some people. It may be news to some, but basically, after seeing the ending of the film, some of the studio executives asked director Bob Clark to change the ending. The proposed idea was to have the cops, you know, leaving Jess alone with Chris, who was Claire's boyfriend, and she wakes up and he says, "Agnes, don't tell him what we did," and then he kills her. But Bob Clark didn't like that idea, and he insisted that the ending, you know, be ambiguous. So I think he always wanted it to be ambiguous.
Do you think? I think that would have worked quite well, wouldn't it, as an ending?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a good ending, but I mean, it is kind of, you know, creepy, you know, but I prefer the ambiguity.
Yeah,
actually.
No, fair enough. Okay, well, should we talk? We can talk a bit more about it, and we can also talk about some of the background information behind the movie. We'll just take a little break for a little bit more of John Waters' Christmas, and here we go.
Here comes Fatty with a sack of shit. Here comes Fatty with a sack of shit. Here comes Fatty with a sack of shit. And all them stinking reindeer. Well, I believe in Santa Claus. Yeah, I believe that he's a prick. And though he comes but once a year, it's enough to make me sick. Him and his Christmas spirit are really a lot of bunk. I'll have to bust my ass for another year just to pay for all this junk. Here comes Fatty with a sack of shit. Here comes Fatty with a sack of shit.
So another heartwarming carol for our audience.
Oh, I love that song. I've never heard it before, but it's now my favorite Christmas song.
It's a little too country for me, but I like the lyrics.
Yeah. Well, you're quite anti-Christmas, aren't you, Eric?
Yes.
Yes.
There. Just the whole pressure to purchase
consumerism thing.
Yeah, to go things. I mean, I don't mind the exchange of presents, but to the excess it bothers me completely.
Well, here's the thing I don't like about Christmas. I don't like the fact that when it gets closer to Christmas, people start celebrating it in like November. I mean, all throughout the month of November, people are already putting up decorations. Yes. The radio's playing nothing but Christmas songs. I hate that. You know, I can understand. Yeah, I can understand that, you know, doing that all throughout December because, you know, it's Christmas month. But when they start doing it at the end of October and all through November, I really get irritated.
Well, it's kind of encroaching on Halloween.
Halloween gets the shaft.
Yeah,
exactly. It does.
And that ain't fair, is it?
No,
it's not fair.
Not fair. Are you taking a piss out of my accent?
Yeah, I think he is.
I did. I had to. It's Christmas. It's the season of giving. I'm giving you a wonderful impersonation of your accent. So
I'm going to
do the same for mine. It'd be more like, hi.
I'm really bad at accents. And I can't do them at all.
Do Joseph's accent. Go on. I want to hear you do Joseph.
Actually, Eric could probably do it. He's pretty good with the accent.
He could do
you. Have a pretty mouth. Is that...
You have a purdy mouth. That's how
purdy mouth. Okay.
I like Eric's accent too.
Southern.
Eric gets his accents up real well.
Go on then. Nathan, do Eric's accent.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I don't think I can. I can do your accent, maybe better than I can do Eric's.
Well, go on then. What's my
the only the only thing like, of Eric's I can do is
I just think of, and we have here Nathan, aka Axe to Grind.
The only thing of Eric's I can do is when he said something about Greg, and he called him Grant,
yeah.
That makes me sound British.
Sounds British.
Grant. I like to dance to Lady Gaga.
Well, okay. Enough of the ribbing, as it were. So, what have we got? What kind of background have we got, Joseph?
Well,
do you want to go first?
I think it's kind of redundant doing background. I mean, since it's such a well-regarded film, most of the stuff people already know, but I'm going to read it anyway. But apparently, Betty Davis was offered the role of Mrs. Mack, but she turned it down. And the role of Peter, played by Keir D'Elia, was originally offered to Malcolm McDowell, and he turned it down. NBC showed the film during primetime under the title Stranger in the House, but it was deemed too scary for network television and was pulled off the air. And around 1986, Olivia Hussey met producers for the film. They were interested in casting her in the Daryl Hannah role. And co-star, you know, Steve Martin met her, and he said, "Oh my God, Olivia, you are in one of my all-time favorite films." You know, thinking it was her classical performance in Romeo and Juliet, Olivia was actually surprised to find out that it was Black Christmas, and Martin claimed to have seen it over 20 times. According to Bob Clark, there were three voices used for the frightening phone calls, including actor Nick Mancuso, an unnamed actress, and himself. The original title of the film's script was Stop Me. It was director Bob Clark who came up with the title Black Christmas, saying that he liked the irony of something dark occurring during such a festive holiday. And Billy is mainly embodied by camera operator Albert J. Dunk, who not only did the POV shots that we were speaking about earlier from the killer's perspective, but he also played him during a few of the murders. Like I said, Nick Mancuso was the main voice actor as Billy, but he was not on set. Both Bob Clark and Keir D'Elia confirmed that D'Elia at no point contributed to Billy at all. And that's all I have. What about you, Justin?
What have I got? I've got a few bits here.
Give it to me now.
Okay.
Oh, you are awful, but I like you.
So what have I got here? Okay, well, the film, when it came out, wasn't well-reviewed at all. It was called Bloody Foul-Mouth Thriller by Variety. I know.
Well, that's fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. No, I suppose
it is a bloody foul mouth thriller, but we enjoy bloody foul mouth thrillers.
Exactly. Yes. But they didn't say it in a good way. The film, when it originally came out, well, it came out under the title Black Christmas, and I thought it was an urban myth but this is true because I found a vintage press clipping saying this is true. The film was retitled Silent Night, Evil Night, because the producers, Warner Brothers, who were distributing the film, were worried the audience would think it was a blaxploitation film, and they were worried that would marginalise the audience. That wasn't the case, so the film was re-released yet again as Black Christmas later in 1975, is my understanding. The film actually was a box office success. Quite often people I've heard saying it wasn't very successful, but in fact it's one of the two films that were credited for starting the whole, cash for slash sort of boom that came later in the early 80s in Canada. Apparently in 1975, it was one of two films. The other one wasn't a slasher movie. I've never even heard of it. It's called The Apprenticeship of Duddy Kravitz, which apparently...
Oh, I love it.
Have you heard it? You've not heard
it.
Yeah,
I love it. I have it on DVD.
Yeah, right. But the film made a lot of money, relatively, and it was the second most successful Canadian film of that year. What else have we got here? Apparently there was... there was, I couldn't find out exactly what this was, but Warner Brothers apparently did some kind of Ballyhoo kind of stunt where they played on the scary phone calls. And the only thing, because I haven't got the full access to a Variety, because it costs something like $600 a year, and I'm too tight to pay that, even for this show.
Ooh.
Well, what? Oh, thank goodness sake. It's what they did. It just says, so all you get little snippets of these things when you search for it on Variety, and it says Warner Brothers pulled a vintage Ballyhoo stunt out of the vaults and wound up overwhelmed by the response. So it doesn't actually say what the stunt was, but it was obviously something to do with the phone calls, because what it says here is weirdo response ties up phones at Warner's. So obviously they were playing off something to do with the phone calls. I've got some more here, but Nathan, how about you? What have you got?
Well, I have two things. All right. Ooh. The first is,
whoa,
you
know, earlier.
I know.
Can't believe.
Hey,
I need a drum roll.
It's amazing.
He's a cat.
There you go. It's a special.
That's my drum roll.
That came out of nowhere.
Well, you know, earlier y'all were talking about the unique shots in the movie of the climbing and stuff. The camera operator, Bert Dunk, actually designed a camera rig that attached to his head, and that's him climbing in the climbing scenes.
Okay,
And also, this movie was directed by a man named Bob Clark. That's my second piece of trivia.
Oh, thank you.
Ooh, did this. Didn't know this.
Oh, and he went on to direct, Christmas Story?
Didn't he also direct the new movie with that person in it?
Ooh,
yeah, he did direct the new movie with that person in it.
Oh, New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
No, that was...
Yeah, that one.
Now, Bob Clark is sadly not with us anymore, is he?
No, sadly. No.
So,
he was killed in a rather unfortunate manner as well.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
It was a car accident, wasn't it?
Yeah.
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 Did anything... Sorry. Oh, I nearly swallowed something there.
Oh,
for goodness sake.
Yeah, that's a very good one. Wouldn't you agree, Matron?
Oh, they never
get. Hey, you set it up.
Well, I honestly, you know, sometimes when you swallow something unexpectedly.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what happened there. So
okay.
We'll move on. Nathan, have you got anything else for us? Or was that your real number two?
Well, actually, this isn't much trivia, but the woman that played the house mother worked with Bob Clark previously in Deranged.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. All right, well, thank you very much, Nathan. How about you, Eric? What have you got
for us? I've got a few things here. Apparently, Gilda Radner was originally attached to play the role of Phil. Of course, she went on then to be famous in Saturday Night Live. And wasn't she married to Gene...
Wilder.
Gene Wilder.
Okay.
But she was attached right up to the... almost to shooting point, but then she had to leave to start work on Saturday Night Live, so she was replaced by Andrea Martin. Edmund O'Brien was originally supposed to play Lieutenant Fuller. Now, he's not an actor I'm that familiar with, but apparently he won an Academy Award for The Barefoot Contessa. He was also in The Fantastic Voyage, you know, a classic 60s science fiction movie, and The Wild Bunch. But he was in the later stages of Alzheimer's, or the early stages even, sorry, of Alzheimer's, and wasn't really up to the task, so he had to be replaced by the wonderful John Saxon. Mm. Bob Clark was thinking, but it never got past the thinking stage, of doing a sequel, where it was set around Halloween, and it was going to be called Halloween, and it was the killer escaping from the mental asylum he was put in at the end of the first film, and then going back to the same sorority house, but this time setting it, you know, on the October 31st instead of Christmas. But that never got anywhere, and of course,
That would have been fantastic.
Would we have had John Carpenter's Halloween if that had happened?
Yeah.
We would have, and it would have been called The Babysitter Murders, probably.
Yes, probably. Yeah. Would we have had The Babysitter Murders 3 Season of the Witch?
We might have. I don't know.
Done. Yeah.
Okay, my final bit of trivia is that Margot Kidder, who I think is utterly fantastic in this and in the Superman movies, I love her in as well, she won Best Actress for this role in Black Christmas at the Canadian Film Awards in 1975.
Okay. Well, no, thank
Nathan,
you.
Nathan, how many people have we met from Black Christmas 2? John Saxon and Margot Kidder. Anyone else did we meet?
I think that's it. I mean, and I don't really count like people we've met through Facebook.
Margot Kidder was awesome. That whole moment where we were at the convention and we walked outside and we wanted to talk to her, but she wasn't there. And we're like, well, we'll come back. And then the window rolled down. She's, well, don't go too far. I'm right here.
Oh, cool.
So we talked to her at her car for a while. And John Saxon was really nice, although I don't think he seemed to remember a whole lot about the movie.
Well, well, it is. He's kind of old, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, kind of really bothered me. I think in the I don't know if it's the commentary for Nightmare on Elm Street DVD or it was an interview or something, but somebody kept bringing up that it was the first time John Saxon had ever played a cop was in Nightmare on Elm Street, and I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah. And if you're going to forget a film, it's not going to be Black Christmas, is it?
I know, that's blasphemy for any horror film.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I've got a couple of other minor things, just about whether or not it's true, but it sounds about right. The film was made or shot between the end of March 1974 and the 11th of May 1974. Now, I know parts of Canada do get very cold, so I'm presuming that is correct, and whether or not it would have been that snowy then, I don't know. But obviously it wasn't shot on the run-up to Christmas or around Christmas, but obviously it is very snowy there. It's not fake snow, is it? I think you can tell the difference between the fake snow in the remake and the real snow in this.
Well, I've read that some of it was real and some of it was fake because they were trying to, you know, they had to go back and do a few more establishing shots of the house, and then the snow had melted, so they had to put a bit of fake snow on there. That's what
I can't imagine that even in May in Canada you'd have snow. I mean, that's
March, yes, so. But May,
no. Okay, well, the budget was Canadian dollars, which is $686,000 Canadian dollars. So that's about £55, I think, isn't it? Or $200 or something. But it grossed around about $4 million in the end in the USA totally, which doesn't sound like very much. But of course, we're talking 1974 to 75, which I imagine that would probably be $20-30 million.
Well, yeah, plus establishing the Canadian dollar against the American dollar. You know, that's actually a lot of money, $4 million for what, a $600,000 budget film.
Yeah,
which
absolutely
would be equal to America, I guess, about $500,000 maybe. Yeah, I could be wrong.
No, so I think you're right.
That's a success. Yeah.
Yeah. As the other thing, I found a few reviews of the film from the time, and I say it didn't get particularly good reviews. It was successful. It did find an audience, which kind of goes against a lot of what I found when I read about the film, that it was kind of a bit of a sleeper and didn't really do much. I suppose the definition of a sleeper film is a film that makes money but doesn't do it in a big kind of a massive all at once kind of thing. But the New York Times review said Black Christmas, which landed on local screens a year after its release in Canada, where it's produced, is a whodunit that begs the question of why it was made. I know.
Take it back.
Exactly. And then they say, it says, considering the ersatz tension and plotting, Black Christmas is hardly worth the effort of all concerned. So it goes to show that it wasn't particularly well regarded. I've got another review to hand, which I'm just going to find here. And this is from, I'm not sure which paper it's from, but it's the title is Silent Reaches Spring's Nadir. It's a toss-up between pre-Christmas or pre-Memorial Day films mark the nadir of the motion picture year, but the decision goes to Silent Night, Evil Night as a tackiest spring movie. So again, they say that it's rubbish. But what is interesting about this review is this is something I've never heard ever mentioned about this film, is they're saying that it's based on a play called Nine Girls. Now, it says, I'm quoting from this review, it says, its story is little more than an update with variations on a mystery play titled Nine Girls, in which one by one sorority sisters are slain. The extra measure here is the house mother. She's such a two-faced, tough-talking tub of lard, her death registers as a plus. Now, what's interesting is that I've never seen that mentioned anywhere else, that there was a play where sorority sisters are bumped off one by one. So I've not found any more about that.
Oh, I want to see that, knows, though.
Yeah,
that
it's
sounds
interesting, isn't
really
it?
Cool.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of, if anyone's interested in on these PDFs, I'm quite happy to send them out. Just drop me a line. It goes on to say it doesn't even compare well to Nine Girls, despite updating. It says it's useless to report the plot. It will never rival Agatha Christie's Ten Little Indians. And the other thing, of course, to say about Black Christmas is that people again say it's kind of the year zero of the slasher movie. But again, with this review from 1975, it says all the conventional ploys are in evidence, from heavy breathing and the maniacal laughter on the sound side to the swaying camera for the killer on the prowl on the camera side. So basically, it's saying it's a hackneyed approach anyway. So as I say, there's nothing new under the sun. That, you know, this film was seen by critics at the time as really just repeating old thriller cliches that's been seen time and time again. So although now people think it's kind of this amazing film, which is an amazing film, but they think it's a film that started it all and was the beginning, you know, that, you know, isn't the case. So I thought that was interesting. So anything else you want to say about Black Christmas?
I mean, what else can you say? I mean, we've covered a lot, but it really is. It's a fantastic film. I mean, for a while there, up until, you know, a few years ago, it was really underappreciated. No one really knew much about it, and then it started kind of getting the recognition it deserves, and I'm really thankful for that. It will always be my favorite slasher film of all time. Always, nothing will best it ever.
Well, does anyone else, when they think of Black Christmas, start singing Wham's Last Christmas, but singing Black Christmas instead in their head? No?
Last Christmas. I heard that on the radio the other day.
Eric, you were going to sing for us, weren't you? Are you going to do it now?
Was I?
Yeah, you said at the end of the last show, I will sing Wham's Last Christmas for everyone.
Oh, well, I can sing Black Christmas.
Go on then.
No, I don't want to now.
Go on. I feel another slug. Have another slug of...
Eric, do you know George Michael's real name?
Oh, it's some Greek name,
Georgios Patiotou.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it didn't have the same ring as George Michael.
No. George doesn't have the same ring.
George Michael's ring.
Yeah. there's something in that.
I'm sure there is. Or has been plenty of times.
Oh, you are awful. But I like you.
So, are you going to regale us?
Promising to sing on the last episode.
You did.
I have absolutely no recollection of saying I was going to sing.
You did. And you accused me of being drunk last time. Okay. Mm. One thing I'm going to ask you, Eric, though, is what did you think about Olivia Hussey's jumper, knitwear, chunky knitwear, with the hands on her boobs?
I know. I thought, and I was thinking, is it a snowflake or is it hands?
It was hands, wasn't it? But I thought actually
that's... It was hands. It was hands.
It was hands, wasn't it? Mm. But what I thought was quite... Mm-hmm. I wonder if that was meant to be a foreshadowing of the killer chasing her and grabbing for her boobies.
Mm. Did he grab for her boobies?
No, he didn't grab her boobies. But the fact that the hands are over her breasts. So I just wonder if that was intentional or it was a fashionable thing to have.
I'd say it was more foreshadowing of Linnea Quigley in Silent Night, Deadly Night 8 years later. 10 years later.
That's true. That is true.
Did you like Art Handel's fur coat?
Well,
that big fur coat.
I'm not big fur
that
coat.
That reminds me. Art Handel still has that coat. It's hanging in his closet. I read that. Mm-hmm.
And we might get an interview with him at some point, do we think?
Yeah, well, we tried. He's busy filming a movie this week, and he told me he would try to get back to me in time, but if not, hopefully we'll get maybe a mini-sode for that. And we also spoke with Lynn Griffin, but I'm not certain if she... Obviously, she didn't get back with us in time either, but you never know. It could happen.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, we shall see. But, I mean, hopefully we've regaled you with lots of stuff about Black Christmas, and I think it's pretty clear that we do really love this film.
I don't think we mentioned the chase scene, did we?
Oh, what, from...
Like the eye on the door?
Oh, we never mentioned the eye in the door.
No, the eye in the door.
We need to mention that.
That is the most iconic scene in the movie.
It is.
Well, Bob Clark said that he doesn't. Before he passed away, someone asked him who did the eye shot, and he said he doesn't remember. And they asked him if it was the cinematographer who did a lot of the POV shots. He said no, he didn't think so, and he said it may have been him doing the eyeball shot, but he actually didn't really remember.
Really.
Oh. It always startles me when he grabs her hair, like when she runs by the stairwell trying to get out, and he grabs her by her hair and pulls her down.
Mm.
pretty scary.
Because that's when Billy, I mean, that's when he really goes psycho, is when he starts chasing her. And the whole movie, he pretty much stays upstairs and kills everyone. But it makes you wonder why you know, he focused all his rage, like, you know, why it all manifested on her at the very end. I mean, he stayed upstairs the whole movie. And maybe, you know, her getting an abortion kind of, you know, triggered that memory of him killing Agnes, and it kind of set him on edge, I guess, maybe, as it were.
I love his waving, like when she locks the door, you know, like he's beating on the door trying to get to her.
Mm-hmm.
God, I can't imagine how terrifying that would be.
The only question I always had was, I'm pretty sure I know Peter was, you know, stalking around outside because he was all pissed off and everything. And he probably heard her screaming, but how did he know that she was in the basement? I mean, because he goes up to the window, he's like, Jess, are you in there? I mean, could he tell where her screaming was coming from? I mean, I always kind of wondered, you know, how he knew to look in the basement.
I always wondered if he was meant to be the killer, just because, you know, the scene where Margot Kidder gets killed, it looks like him.
Well, Bob Clark and him specifically said that they had no intention of Peter ever being the killer, and nor did he ever, you know, participate in the...
I do agree though with Nathan that in that scene with Margot Kidder, it does look like Keir Delay, his eye, well, you can only see his eyeball really because everything else is dark. But it does look like him, I think.
Yeah, no, it's one of those mysteries which unfortunately Bob Clark's taken to his grave, isn't he?
I love the way it ends though. I love the way that there's no end credits music. I think that is quite eerie.
That telephone ringing and until the credits end. Yeah.
Do y'all think she's dead?
Yeah, because in the film they said he makes a call before he kills, and that was his final call. So basically, he's going to kill her, or maybe
he already did.
Yeah, or he might have. Or did he call after each killing?
I think he called after each killing.
Yeah, so that means she was probably dead. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Very haunting.
That's very haunting. Yeah. So that's Black Christmas. So I think, have we got anything else we want to say about the film before we move on?
The only other thing I wanted to say is I like the opening, version of Silent Night they play in the opening credits. I think it sets the mood.
How about the iconic artwork with the woman in the rocking chair with a plastic bag over
it? And the tagline?
Yeah. If this movie doesn't make your skin crawl, it's on too tight.
But that's used in a number of different movies, isn't it? That tagline.
I don't know.
Is it? I don't know.
I think it is.
I've never heard it anywhere else. If Eric doesn't make your skin crawl, he's in too tight.
Oh, God.
What?
God.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, maybe I'll sing now to change the subject. Black Christmas, I'll give you my heart.
I like the artwork in Claire's room, by the way. The grandma in the rocking chair and the peace sign that the house mother's trying to cover up.
Well, that's why it's kind of really funny, isn't it? That kind of the way that he was able to do those kind of funny little moments, but it didn't take away from the kind of the sheer horror. Because other thing I don't think we've spoken about with the phone calls was whether or not it's true is that I read that the phone calls are recorded a lot milder. The language is very mild, relatively, to what. So they were hearing a kind of not what was actually used in the end. Have you heard that?
Yeah, Clark wanted to, he recorded, you know, just like faint curse words, but he wanted to kind of up the ante a little bit. So he went back in post-production and he had Nick Mangino and that woman who did, the other actress who they didn't name, basically said, he told him, hey, look, just kind of curse, say whatever you want, just kind of be foul and we'll loop it back. He wanted it to be more, you know, aggressive, I think.
Mm. Right. Well, have we got anything else we want to say about Black Christmas?
One more. I just wanted to, when you were talking about Mrs. Mack and the kind of comical undertones, I really do like that scene where she hides the image and then Claire's father pokes his head up from the door and she's like, "It's so kind of you to do this for me." And then he walks away and she's like, has that look on her face and she just flips him the bird. I love that.
It's great, isn't it?
She goes, "Damn it, Claude, you little prick."
Yeah, she's a good character. I really like her. Damn it, Claude, you little prick. I love her.
Well, we're going to have a little break.
I love that cat, by the way. It's so big.
Claude. Yes, Claude the cat.
Well, obviously, Billy had no trouble lugging it up into the attic.
Right. Well, we are already at the 2 hour mark, so we're going to take a little break here, and I've got this one specially for you, Eric.
Black Christmas. Special.
That's the magic of Wham. Black,
yeah, with Black Christmas.
I just want you all to know that you're all very special to me on this Christmas holiday.
Well, thank you.
Merry Christmas, you guys.
Yes, exactly. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good fright.
Absolutely.
That was my pun for the show. Yeah.
Very good.
Oh, you... Thank you, Joseph. You're making me feel all warm inside. So, on to feedback. Sorry?
I said that's one of the ways he does.
I'm not that kind of doctor.
Matron, please, I'm not that kind of doctor.
God, we're nothing if not professional.
That's still my favorite carry-on clip we have.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even understand what it is. Who's matron?
Hattie Jakes. It's just Kenneth Williams in the Fatty Carry On Jakes. Films, Fatty Jakes. And she's just kind of a very prim, proper, rather large lady. And she keeps on trying to get sexy with Kenneth Williams, who wants nothing to do with her. So that's why, ooh, matron, where that came from. So, feedback. Joseph, do you want to read out the contact details for us to tell us what a wonderful Christmas we provided you with?
If you want to give us a good Christmas present, you can
send
reach
me a PlayStation
us.
3.
Yeah. We'll take feedback as Christmas gifts this year. Yeah. Next year, you better do a little better. But you can reach us at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 858-233-9281. We are on Facebook. Just search for The Hysteria Continues. And we are on Twitter, which I really need to update. That's twitter.com/THC_podcast.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you, Joseph.
If you want to speak with us, you know, in a chatty setting, go to the Body Count Continues forums. We're always looking for new members.
Yes.
I didn't even notice that one.
Just because it's Christmas. Okay, so we have got some feedback this time. Talking about the forums, Joseph, shall we... We've kind of... people on forums have been saying that we haven't been using what they've been saying as feedback on the show. And I think that's quite a valid point, really. We just kind of, it would be good for us to do that. So we're going to look at ways that we can do that. But for now, Joseph, you're going to do a little overview of what people have been saying?
Yeah, I guess we've been meaning to kind of read stuff from the forums, but it's usually been kind of one line stuff. And I don't know, I thought that might seem monotonous, but we might start doing a compilation of lines and reading it all out at once. But for this episode, 42nd Street Freak writes, he says, "Hello to all the hysterians. I reviewed Night School ages ago as part of my nasty section, but I have very little memory of it. I have an American VHS, but I did like it, the awful Ward, Rachel Ward aside, and the roundabout death was superb. As mentioned, it was one of the UK nasties that became a nasty, like the Evil Dead, despite being a cut version. Top show, guys, and very funny. Great to hear the cat and the carry-on sound bites. Brings a tear to my English eye, it does. But I might say you actually get a lot of feedback from many people on the forums right here. Because I remember last week we made a joke about not getting any feedback, which is not true. I was actually joking. But podcasts with feedback forums never seem to use the feedback post as feedback. If we posted our post as an email, it would be read out. But post our posts as posts, and they're not counted. Okay. Obviously, you wouldn't use one-line, very short posts, though there's nothing wrong with them. But if people have a long sentence or even sentences about the show, basically an email, they could be classed as feedback. And that's all he had to say. That was 42nd Street Freak. Okay. So thank you, 42nd Street Freak. I'm not sure your real name.
Thank you, 42nd Street Freak. And check out his website. It's Beardy Freak Reviews.
Yes, yeah. That guy. He's got really excellent reviews. Well written. Very good writer.
Great. Okay. Well, who would like to go next?
Well, I have a couple more. You want me to go ahead and read those out?
Or we could take it in turns. Oh, I don't mind.
Yeah, sure. Someone else go next.
Eric.
Okay. I'll go. I've got a email here from Brian Sammons. He says, "Hey guys, love the Night School show as always, but your top 70s horror movies, come on, you guys missed some great, great films. I mean, no one mentioned The Exorcist. Sure, Eric nominated The Exorcist 2 for a laugh, I guess. Just kidding. No, I'm not. But no one else mentioned the original. Or what about other spectacular satanic cinema such as The Omen or Rosemary's Baby? Or what about Phantasm? That movie is awesome, a true nightmare captured on film. And no love for Cronenberg? Besides Rabid and Shivers, there was his creepy as hell, The Brood. And don't even get me started on how all four of you skipped over Dawn of the Dead, the best zombie movie ever made. Okay, I'm just razzing with you a little bit, but there were so many great movies in the 70s, it would be impossible to cover them all, and I like that you had some obscure flicks in there, like Death Dream. But I do have a challenge for you four. Doing a top three for the 70s and 80s is easy in one regard, as there are a ton of great films to choose from. Now, how about you try to do a best-of list from the horrible 90s? I'd love to see you come up with a dozen non-slasher horror films that were actually good during the deadbeat decade. Consider it a dare. Anyway, all joking aside, this episode was another great one, and please do keep them coming. All the best, Brian Sammons.
Thank you, Brian.
Well, Brian, I didn't really include The Exorcist 2 in my top three 70s non-slashers as a joke, because I do genuinely love the film. I do love the original more, but I saw this as an opportunity to give some love out to The Heretic. And I do love giving love to heretics. So that's why I didn't mention The Exorcist, but normally it would be in my top three. I can't believe I missed Phantasm, because that's one of my favorites. That was just an omission, just because I forgot. Rosemary's Baby is 1968, I believe, so that's not a 70s film. The original Omen, again, that's one that slipped my mind. I don't know if it would be in my top three, but I do love it. Dawn of the Dead, I think I've said this before, I think it's kind of overrated. Wouldn't be one of my favorite films, although I do think it is quite good. What do you guys think of our omissions for the 70s?
I agree with you. I mean, I think Dawn of the Dead is overrated. I think our top three is not necessarily, I mean, it could be what we think is the best, but it's also more it's what we think is the best, and it's also more along the lines of, you know, what we like at the time and stuff like that. I don't think everyone should go out and pick the most obvious of choices. Mm. And I'm not saying that your choices, Brian, are the most obvious, but also I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but I don't like Phantasm. I think it's boring. I think it's overrated. Sorry, I know that's going to get a lot of feedback, but
what about the Cronenberg trio he mentions, Rabid, Shivers, and The Brood?
I love all three.
I love all three as well. Yeah.
They're excellent films. Excellent. Especially The Brood. I think The Brood is my favorite of the three.
For a long time, it wasn't my favorite, but it is now of his 70s films. Yeah.
Justin? I'm not Justin, in case people are listening.
Oh, you sound just like him, sorry.
I'm doing a really good accent.
No, I'm so sorry. This is a great impersonation. Yeah. I was just saying, like, I don't regret my top 70s picks. I really love the ones that I chose. But the problem is, you know, when you're doing these, like, I forget. There's so many I forget. I don't remember them until, you know, after the fact.
Well, I used Wikipedia and went through the year from 70 to 79, and I, you know, I saw a lot of those films that, you know, he mentioned, but, you know, to me, you know, they're not my favorites. I mean, they're favorites to a lot of people, but I prefer what I picked, you know. It is what it is. You pick what you pick, I guess. But
Exactly. I think that's the thing, isn't it? We got some flack when we started the podcast by saying people were thinking we were saying these were the best of the genre or the whatever the top three is, but that's why we decided to say they're our personal favorites, because
they're not the best.
No,
we think for everyone, it's just what we like. So exactly. There you go.
Exactly. But I do like the idea of the challenge of doing 90s
non-slasher.
Yeah, I'm not sure the 90s were as bad as the noughties. I'm not sure. No,
I can think three off the top of my head that I really like. So I take his challenge right now.
Yeah,
we'll save that for another episode.
Yes,
we accept your challenge.
Yes. Okay. Well,
there was, there, in fairness, there was a lot of rubbish in the 90s, but I think there was enough good. I think there was plenty of good stuff as well.
Absolutely. Mm. Okay. Right. Well, thank you very much for that, Nathan. What have you got for us?
I don't have anything. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, I wish I did.
Make something up.
Okay, I have one here from Amanda Huggenkiss, and she says, "Loving the show."
Great. Well, thank
you,
Amanda.
Wait a minute, Nathan. You do have. It's not really feedback, but you do have something that you took a picture of last night. Maybe you want to tell everyone what that is.
Ooh, what did you take a picture of last night?
Something very large, I'm going to say.
Yeah. Oh, I'm getting my.
How's the design and the material on that? Because I haven't got my shirt yet.
Oh yes.
Oh, it's good. I mean, it's good. I got the a hoodie with our logo on it. I told Wes that's what I wanted for Christmas. So, you know, he bought that, and I got it early. So I took a picture of it. It's nice. I mean, I like it.
It looks good. Yeah.
Great. Okay.
I can wear Justin, Eric, and Joseph all the time.
Oh. What website can we purchase one of those on?
Oh, go to cafepress.com/thehysteriacontinues. We have t-shirts, hoodies, even pajamas. If you want to sleep with us at night.
Exactly. Is that the first time you've had four men's on your chest?
Yes.
Four men on your chest, even.
I don't want to get into last Friday night.
Okay, fair enough. Oh, well, okay.
I don't want to get into last night because the three men I had on my chest would be Scott, you, and Greg, and that's just a nightmare I don't want to sleep with.
Well, I want Grant on my chest.
I'll tell him you said that.
No.
I'm going running with him today. I'll mention that.
Okay.
I'm sure he'd be delighted. Okay, well, I'll try and bring it back on topic now. And I've got some feedback on iTunes from Xander Dean. And it would really help us. If you like the show, then please go onto iTunes and leave a review, because I think the more reviews, the more people hear about the podcast, and the more people we get listening, and the more we can, you know, strokes our egos and various other things. So it's just really good. So we're really happy to get feedback, and this is some short feedback from Xander Dean. It doesn't have to be very long. It's nice if it's long, but it doesn't matter if it's not. But it's
Would you stop?
Setting it up.
Yeah.
You're just toying with us, what you're doing.
It is Christmas. Let me have some fun.
It's the season of giving, yeah.
Nothing says Christmas more than a stream of double entendres.
Absolutely.
And a stream of other things too.
Joseph, do you prefer giving or receiving?
I'm a giver, actually. Yeah.
Okay, well, fair enough.
Believe it or not, I'm a giver.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. Let me read this now. Okay, no more interruptions, thank you. A very happy camper. Love it. The place to get the knowledge about all your body count movies. Especially love the defence of these movies as films that matter. May not all be art, but certainly fascinated, entertained and intrigued me growing up. Just as the podcast fascinate, entertain and intrigue. And if you like this podcast, check out Hysteria Lives Reviews. They will have you laughing out loud and biting the bit to watch the films. And that's from my mum. It was from Xander Dean. So thank you, Xander Dean, for writing in. That was, lovely bit of feedback to get. So thank you. And have we got anything else? I know we've got a voicemail coming up, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, I got a couple more over here.
Okay, yeah.
I actually got one I'll save for after the voicemail, but I got one says, "Hello, Hysterians. Long-time listener but first-time writer here. I would like to thank everybody for the great work you do bi-weekly. Also, I would like to thank you for picking a good film after two very disappointing films." Uh-huh. And I'm going to interject a little fuck you there, but never mind. I enjoyed Terror Eyes as a light but well-done slasher, and I can't wait for your comments. And I was introduced to crimmies through your message boards. I would find great to have a crimmie show like you did for the Jolly ones. Now I go back to go scare little kids around campfire. Wish you all best, Jean from France. And I understand why the English is a little phonetic. But thank you, Jean, I guess. Jean-Claude Vettel.
Jean, storyteller.
Jean.
Jean. Yes, thank you, Jean. Excellent. Should we do our voicemail? And I think it would be good to actually do a creamy episode. We have talked about that because basically there's very little information on them. But we'll have a think about it. Because have you guys seen any creamy
I haven't seen one.
No,
I've never seen any.
Okay. I saw one. I don't remember the title. It was a weird title.
Are they horror?
I can certainly get a couple of them. Maybe show one to Nathan.
Well, I'll tell you what, I shall suggest one that we could do as a little side project at some point. When it's a little bit quieter after Christmas and we've got a little bit more time, then we could do possibly a double bill one show where we look at a slasher movie and also maybe a crimmy, because a lot of the crimmies actually are very much like proto-slashers and like based bouncing off Psycho, but also like the kind of Scooby-Doo-ish kind of Psycho mysteries. And it's all lots of funny looking killers in pointy hats and masks.
Ooh, I even got a top three idea for that show. So thank you. You just gave me an idea.
Ooh, well, I'm glad I gave you something. So, okay, well, here's the voicemail.
Oh, hey guys, this is James. I sent you an email on your, like, two shows ago, your last summer party show. And I was just calling to tell you guys that you guys do a great job. And I just wanted to share that my personal list of favorite or people that I wish hadn't died in the slasher movie. My number three would have to be the head reverend character in Superstition. I mean, he was the main character and he basically did everything. He was nice to everyone. He, like, when the cop guy was like yelling at the old woman, the old caretaker, I guess, he was nice to her and he believed in the superstition, I guess. And he just gets dragged into the lake, which I thought was pretty fuckish. Okay, my number two would have to be Seth from Hell Knight. I mean, in the beginning when we first meet him, I was like, oh, he's just gonna die. But then he actually, I mean, he did drugs. I think he did drugs. There was the alcohol, there was the sex. He was doing everything wrong. But then he climbs the gate, tries to alert the police, steals a shotgun from the police station, and goes back to Garth Manor to rescue his friends. I thought that was awesome, and I was cheering from all the way, and I was really sad to see him die. Even though I knew it was coming, but I just wish that they would throw a curveball and let him live. And my number one would be Juan from Club Dread. You guys haven't discussed Club Dread on your show yet. I was just wondering if you guys have actually seen it. It's one of my all-time favorite slasher movies, and I love it. It's a great parody if you love the old slasher movies. And Juan is basically a Costa Rican dive instructor. I mean, he was really, really great character. I mean, all the characters in this movie are likable. Every single one. And Juan, I don't know, something just really touched me when he died. And he was awesome. But anyway, there's my list, and I know that you're doing a Christmas show after your Humongous episode. I watched a little bit of Humongous, and I think it's okay so far. I'll try and finish it before I listen to your show, which is most likely going to be amazing, as always. And, I know it's for your, after that, you're doing a Christmas show, and I just wanted to know, or I want to put in a request for you guys to discuss Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, just because that is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. But I love it. It's just so fun. And I think you guys could have a lot of fun with it. I'd love to hear your opinions on that one. So, yeah, there is a little voicemail. Hope I didn't take up too much of your time. And thanks. Keep up the great work, and I'll keep listening.
Well, that's brilliant. Thank you.
I think we satisfied his craving. We did talk about Silent Night, Deadly Night 2.
We did.
I didn't get to say what I wanted to say about it, though. I just wanted to say that I love that Justin mentioned that in the original she has like an accent, but she doesn't have it in the sequel. Like they forgot that she had this accent.
Is it the same actress?
No, it's not the same actress. All right. They just forgot she had an accent.
I think that was probably the last thing they were concerned about, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They were concerned about adding up the running time.
Yeah. Certainly were.
Great choices for people that should have survived, especially Seth. Very much with you on that. It's a film peppered Hell Night with likable characters. But yeah, he was, you know, for that kind of dude type sort of frat kid, he was pretty likable, wasn't he? So yeah, it's a shame he died. So and you know, thank you ever so much for phoning in. And you know, as you can see, we're not going to make fun of you if you phone in. Well, we can't promise that, but we probably won't make fun of you. So as you can hear, we would like to hear some more. So please do phone in. Do we have anything else? So are we going to wrap?
Yeah, I got one more. It's Christmas. Actually from the guy who just left the voicemail. He says, hey, guys, sorry if my call-in was a bit rambling. I was unprepared, I'll admit it. But I forgot to mention one thing. There's a website called stickam.com.
where shows can go live and there's a chat room for listeners. I'm not sure how it works, seeing as you're in separate countries, but I think it would be insanely cool if you guys did a live show with chat room involvement. Also, I was just wondering what your thoughts were on Blood Rage and Iced. I listened to the first episode a while ago, but I seem to have forgotten. I haven't heard Blood Rage mentioned on the show at all. I find both of these films to be really, really fun, especially Blood Rage, and it would be awesome to see some episodes on them. Also, Justin, I saw a cut version of Psycho Cop 2, and I still adored it. That movie is so much fun, even without the gore. But since you do have an uncut version, by all means, pop it in and enjoy yourself. I don't want to take up more of your time, so I'll close by saying...
You are awful, but I like you.
He says, so I'll close by saying, keep up the good work and don't stop churning out these wonderful shows. My best, James.
Well, thank you, James. I also forgot to say about Club Dread. I haven't seen Club Dread since it came out, actually, and I didn't like it at the time, but I have a feeling that I might like it a bit more now. I don't know.
Oh, I love Club Dread. He's right. All the characters in that film are extremely likable. That's one of the driving things behind the film, is that all the characters, you kind of like, they're so fun and kind of carefree, and they're not mean or anything like that. They're just likable guys.
Juan Castillo. What do you think of that joke in the movie, Joe, where the girl's name is You, and she's getting hysterical, and that girl goes, "Quiet, You."
Juan Castillo comes in, and he's like, "You and Hank are fucking dead." He's like, "What did I do?" He's like, "No, you and Hank are fucking dead. Are you talking to me, you little shit?" I still love the, from this moment on, Machete, Phil Coletti was forever known as Machete Phil.
And I like when Yu's trying to make her getaway in the golf cart, and the killer's just walking right next to her.
Yes.
I know Eric loves this game. Trying to get it started and everything.
Mm. Eric loves that movie, don't you, Eric?
Justin, I've only seen it once, and that was when it came out, and I hated it. I didn't just sort of not like it; I absolutely hated it. But I mean, because it's what, it's about 9 or 10 years old now, so it's quite a while since I've seen it. Mm.
But also, James mentioned about Blood Rage, didn't he? And what's the other film? Iced, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Iced. I love Iced.
Yeah, Iced is great. Iced is good fun, isn't it?
And yeah, I like Iced, yeah.
I'm not much of a Blood Rage fan. Great gore, but I always thought it was kind of boring.
Yeah, it's very gory, isn't it? And it's quite funny in some places, but that'd be quite an interesting one to do at some point, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can do both of them, actually. It'd be a nice show.
Absolutely. Well,
of course, if you're going to do Iced, you also have to do Blood Frenzy, because it's director and same cast.
Yes. Oh, God,
it's like the
Blood
antithesis.
Frenzy.
It's like one's a hot desert movie and one's a cold snow movie.
Mm.
Oh. And made by the same people.
That'd be brilliant.
Oh, those movies are so awesome.
And they're both rather, humorous.
Mm. I adore them.
Yes. Okay. You know, we'll look at doing that. After this show, we are going to talk about what we're going to be doing next. We haven't decided, so we can't tell you. Oh, dear.
Oh, I know what we're doing
an
next.
An evil laugh.
That laugh, I already know.
Uh-oh.
It's my pick, people, so you know what to expect.
Gosh. Yes. Well.
Oh, I know what he's picking.
Do you?
Oh, my God.
It's not Terror at 10 Killer, is it?
I think it is.
No,
it's
not Terror at 10 Killer.
Oh, is it not? Oh, well, then it's going to be better than that.
I'm going to cut Eric some slack. I really am.
Oh,
I'm not going to pick Terror at 10 Killer, even though I love it.
Let's just say it's a cinematic film.
Oh, is it going to be?
Oh, yes.
What I think.
Yeah, I think it's what
Only
I think as well.
You can get in touch with the person. If not, I got a backup in mind.
Well, I have tried. I will have another look, but it's proving a little bit problematic. And there's an interesting story behind that, but we'll leave you in suspense, I'm afraid, because we haven't decided. But I hope if you're listening to this on Christmas Day, then I hope you have yourself a black little Christmas. But if you're not and you're catching up after Christmas, then I hope you had a great day and you weren't killed and dismembered by Santa Claus.
Or Billy.
Mm-hmm. And you found whatever you wanted in Santa's sack. And hopefully we will see you in the new year for some more fun and frolics. So anything else to say, guys? Or
I just want to say Merry I'm Christmas, watching the everyone. Eye in the door scene right now.
Okay.
And I just want to say Black Christmas and a New Year's Evil to everyone.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, Merry Christmas, everyone, and have yourself a great little time, and we will see you in the new year.
Merry Christmas.
I wonder, would you do me a favor? Would you go to my front door, bend down, and look through the letterbox? And if you can see my pussy, would you drop a sardine on the mat?
I have to thaw my pussy out before I can. I've been out all night.
He's expanded his act. But that being one person... Claire, that's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir doing their annual obscene phone call.
Now we've got that sorted out, can we get on? I've got to get home. If my pussy isn't attended to by 8 o'clock, I could be stroking it for the rest of the evening.
Mrs. Slocum, there is a strict rule that staff may not bring pets to the store.
Well, you know how clumsy those removal men are. I'm not having them handling my pussy.
You, Mrs. Slocum.
Mr. Humphreys, leave my pussy alone. Well, if I'm not home on the stroke of 6, my pussy goes mad. It's very short notice. There's my pussy to consider. At the desk, and she said, have any of your constables reported having seen this lady's pussy?
That's
going to let it out.
Time. Oh, Mr. Rumbold, I hope this isn't going to take long. My pussy's been...
Listen, you pervert, why don't you go over to Lambakai? They could use a little of this.
Oh, convenient. And I hope we're not going to be late tonight. Because I've left...
Oh, Hemsworth, why don't you go find a wall sock and stick your tongue in it? That'll give you a charge.
Down. The mere sight of my pussy drives him mad.
He's fucking crazy.
Look, I'm trying to get my pussy on the phone.